Knowledge fire.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan. Knowledge Fight.
Need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in
Stop it.
Andy in Kansas.
Andy.
It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the altar of Selene, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today, buddy?
My bright spot today is, you are going on a little vacation soon.
That's true.
And I'm going to take a little trip myself.
That's true also.
And so we are, you know, we're busy like little bees trying to prepare for this trip. Mm-hmm. Have some episodes to release for folks while we are away.
Mm-hmm.
But I did take a little bit of time for myself, and I watched some Jurassic Park movies.
Yes, of course.
And I spent a while before we started recording complaining to you about them.
Complaining, reviewing, whatever you like.
Talking about how insane the Jurassic World trilogy is.
Sure.
And how unacceptable they are as movies.
Yeah.
How they ruin the magic of dinosaurs. But I don't want to rehash any of that territory.
Sure,
because I don't want to bore you. But I did have one more observation.
Okay.
And that is that Chris Pratt is incredibly lucky.
Yeah.
He does not have the it that I remember him having.
Ooh.
Watching The Lost World 2, I was like, this seems like it could have killed a career.
Ooh.
And he escaped from that and is still a leading man.
Wild.
Still in a lot of stuff.
Wild.
I don't think I had that response to him when I saw Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
He was
a dynamo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's something about him in that role that stinks.
Yeah. Wasn't that like right when he became one of the people who believes weirdo stuff?
He might be. I feel like that was...
No offense to people who believe weirdo stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that the first Lost World was like one of his big... first, like, leading guy roles.
Okay, okay.
And I think maybe he didn't have enough of the presence to step into a sequel to really be in it.
Mm.
It felt like a dud.
When you're cast as the guy who, like, holds out his hand to imaginary raptors, what are you gonna do? What are you going to do?
Sure.
Right? Like, that's just going to suck.
You've made your name as, like, charming, lovable, slacker, loser on Parks and Recreation,
yeah.
And then you're out alpha-ing raptors.
Mm.
It's strange. It can be done.
Sure.
I just don't feel like it was done.
When Han Solo goes to Indiana Jones, you're like, I buy it. Whenever a dumpy guy from Parks and Rec goes to Indiana Jones, you're like, no.
Guy who out alphas raptors, and like we've seen Muldoon.
Yeah,
you know, like we have guys from Jurassic Park's past that were pretty strong.
Yeah,
Sam Neill could have figured out how to alpha these raptors if it's possible.
I think so too.
Can't have fucking Chris Pratt.
Sam Neill's great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, what's your bright spot?
My bright spot is the aforementioned we're out of here trip coming up.
Sure.
Very exciting. We're at the stage of like complete and utter nervousness.
Yeah, I bet.
Every my wife last night, she had to let the dogs out for her mom's.
So she let the dogs out.
She indeed let the dogs out.
Shit.
She had to do that, and then she was there all day because then their plane was going to land and they were going to make it home and they were going to let the dogs out at night.
So they let the dogs out.
So they were going to. So my wife came home, but then their plane had to be redirected because it was raining so hard last night. So my wife had to drive all the way back down there again to let the dogs out at night. So she let the dogs out multiple times.
Okay.
But it was raining, and we're so close to the trip, I'm in my head just going like, this would be the time she hydroplanes a little bit, and then boom, we're in the hospital, and no one's going anywhere, you know? Mm. It's that kind of nervousness before a trip.
That's a shitty kind of nervousness, because, you know, most of the time you would think that it's like, well, the fear is it's going to rain a bunch, and my travel plans are going to be affected, and maybe I'll be delayed, or the flight will be canceled or something. Oh, no, but you went with hydroplane.
Yep. No, I never worry about that. Once the trip starts, it starts. It's going, there's nothing I can do.
I know for sure that's not true.
That is true. I have traveled
with you.
Multiple times. Because that wasn't my fault.
I've had a number of travel experiences with you, and I think you're great. I think you're fun to travel with, but chill is not the word I would use.
Chill's not the best. No,
hey, whatever happens, happens.
Hey, guys, you know what's going on? What's going on? It doesn't matter.
Bullshit. Well, I hope everything goes well for your trip. Yeah. I hope you have a good time.
I'm excited. We are.
And I'm at the stage of preparing for the your absence, where I'm, fuck, I got to get 3 or 4 episodes together. We got to get this out.
Scramble. Scramble.
But it's fun. It's fun. It's a nice, it's a throwback to
the old days.
Churning the butter.
Yeah.
So, Jordan, today we have an episode to go over.
All right.
We're going to be talking about June 7th to 9th. 2025.
All right.
The year of our Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode, there's some problems. It's hard to. I think there's a couple points where I might overstate some things.
Okay.
In the course of this episode, and I can't not.
Okay.
So get ready for that.
It's gonna get said.
But before we get to this episode, let's take a little moment to say hello to some new wonks.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
So first, I'm the angriest Smurf in Reykjavik, Iceland. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hey, guys, I love the show. Shout out from the big news, Brzezinski. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And your old pal, Dog Hands. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Now, this person has requested the little breaky soundbite for the technocrat drop.
Yes.
And I'm going to say that I don't have them labeled like that.
I know you don't.
So there's a chance.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
We can dream.
Yep.
I'm just acknowledging the request was made.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you get the correct one,
amazing.
It's a 1 out of 3 chance.
Amazing.
So we will see. but thank you so much to just wanted to shout out my dogs, Gus and Maverick. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk. I have risen above my enemies. I might quit tomorrow, actually. I'm just going to take a little breaky now. A little breaky for me. And then we're going to come back. And I'm going to start the show over. But I'm the devil. I gotta be taken off the air. I'm doing all this. Blah, 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 blah. Fuck you. Fuck you. I got plenty of words for you, but at the end of the day, fuck you and your New World Order, and fuck the horse you rode in on, and all your shit. Maybe today should be my last broadcast. I mean, maybe I'll just be gone a month, maybe 5 years. Maybe I'll walk out of here tomorrow, and you never see me again. That's really what I want to do. I never want to come back here again. I apologize to the crew and the listeners yesterday that I was legitimately having breakdowns on air. I'll be better tomorrow.
Nah.
Ooh.
So listeners at home did not get a chance to see this, but I did do a fist bump.
Yep.
When the track started playing and I realized we got the right one.
Fantastic.
It could have gone bad, but you got it.
I'm telling you, that was an educated guess. You had a 45% chance, not just a 33%.
I had some feelings.
Yeah.
I believe that God spoke to me.
You had
and
vibes.
Told me which way to go.
And what time it is.
It's time to get going. So we start off today, and the protests in L.A. have kicked off.
Great.
And so Alex is doing a special Saturday episode, somewhat about the protests,
sure.
But also Elon Musk retracted his statements.
Yes, he did.
And so this is another topic that will, I think, might have driven him to do the episode.
Okay.
I've been telling you this for over a year. I told you Trump would win. I told you he'd win in a landslide. We would overpower the fraud. But then they would start claiming that Trump was going to kill migrants and that ICE was going to kill illegal aliens at demonstrations. And as soon as he was president-elect, they would start beating the drum, and that this summer they would then get violent in major cities like Los Angeles, Denver, Seattle, Portland, New York, Chicago, Austin, and that you would then start seeing attacks on Jewish centers, synagogues, museums. And then I said you would then see the illegal aliens and their supporters getting violent, and that Soros had bought all these Spanish-speaking radio stations to direct people with their inside sources that's now come out to go attack ICE. And now you saw massive blow-ups and riots in multiple states, particularly in Los Angeles, with the illegal aliens and their Democrat Soros handlers attacking viciously ICE. We also saw it in Minneapolis last week. They were on raids to get the kidnapped children, and they got some. You said, well, they put them on the news. They're minors. They have to process it and charge the people, and it's happening. There they were trying to stop them going to get the children being held at these different NGO facilities.
So as we know from listening to this show for years, there's always going to be a summer of rage. No matter who's in office, the globalists always love to stir things up in the summer and false flag some riots. Over the past months, Trump's administration has been acting with a brazen impunity as it relates to rounding up immigrants and assumed immigrants. For a while, the media tried to cover stories about legal residents being detained and sent to El Salvador, but it quickly became clear that our current government does not care about the press and recognize that the media really only has the power that they allow them to have. People have filed suits, but it's also become somewhat clear that the Trump administration doesn't really respect courts, and Congress doesn't seem particularly interested in drawing a hard line to rein in their power, so it's become an essentially powerless situation. At the same time, the wanton abuse carried out by ICE has continued and escalated. It always felt like this was the likely direction things would go with Trump taking office again, because a major part of his campaign relied on stoking xenophobic fears and anger while exaggerating the threat that immigrants posed to the community. When they took office, unsurprisingly, there really isn't enough crime being carried out by immigrants to justify a massive power grab based on a real threat. So the White House set out to manufacture that justification. As NBC News reported, Trump's deputy chief of staff and flagrant bigot Stephen Miller was pissed off that the number of unauthorized immigrant arrests were too low in May 2025, so he, quote, berated and threatened to fire senior ICE officials if they didn't begin detaining 3,000 migrants a day, according to two sources who spoke to attendees. Miller also threatened to fire leaders of field offices posting the bottom 10% of arrest numbers monthly. This is basically a recipe for how you get law enforcement to start harassing the public. You have a set minimum number of arrests you're supposed to make, regardless of whether or not the level of crimes being committed merit that, and then on top of that, you create a scenario where the lowest performing offices will be punished. It's not enough to hit your minimum quota. You need to do better than at least 10% of the other offices if you want to keep your position. When law enforcement is incentivized like this, it always results in abuses. If an officer needs to give out 10 tickets a day and really only encounters 6 ticket-worthy incidents a day, then at least 4 people are going to get bullshit tickets. You end up in environments that favor police setting traps, engaging in stop-and-frisk tactics, and adopting broken windows policing-type philosophies. The public is pretty gullible, and it moves slower than you'd like, so when this kind of momentum gets going, it takes a while for people to realize that the police are full of shit and solving non-existent problems by shaking everyone down. But generally, a point is reached where people have had enough and start to push back against intrusive police tactics that are being employed. We're not quite at that point yet, but it's beginning, and the protests that happened in Los Angeles around this time were a sign of beginnings of that progression. There is a summer of rage warming up, so I'm not going to argue with Alex on that point. But where I'm going to push back on him is the claim that the protests are just the work of the globalists, like Soros paying people to riot. People are legitimately mad about what law enforcement has become and the tactics that they're using to round up members of their community. It's a sincere outrage, and it's an outrage that, if properly understood, Alex cannot be against. The political philosophy he's supposed to hold dear is in direct contrast to the police state that the Trump administration is bringing in, which is why the voice of this and all protests like it must be branded as inauthentic. These are Soros NGOs doing all this stuff. So days prior to this episode, there was a confrontation with ICE because they showed up to raid a taco restaurant in Minneapolis called Las Cuatro Milpas. The mayor, Jacob Fry, claimed that police were there in relation to a warrant for, quote, drugs and money laundering, but folks on the ground were very suspicious about the presence of ICE agents on the scene. There weren't brutal attacks on the police, but one person was arrested for assaulting an officer, and in their charging documents, it's claimed that the initial raid on Las Cuatro Milpas was one of eight that law enforcement carried out on various locations that day. They had warrants from a judge, and these raids were the result of them finding 900 pounds of crystal meth in a storage unit. From the information they've released, it appears that the crowd were wrong about the pretty reasonable assumption that this was an immigration raid when it was really part of a larger criminal investigation. But this incident does really highlight the situation that we're in right now. Why was ICE there, participating in serving a search warrant in this drug case? In the current climate, it's very hard not to assume that this was an immigration raid targeting a Mexican restaurant, because that's the kind of stuff that's happening now. It would be great if the cops could just tell people, this isn't about immigration, we're here because we found 900 pounds of meth, but at this point, I think that the police don't have enough credibility to resolve that kind of misunderstanding. Involving ICE only deepens the credibility gap, and it adds to the confusion. It's notable that Alex is bringing this up as a specific touch point, though, because while the majority of attention about the anti-ICE protests involved Los Angeles, Minneapolis was another flashpoint, partially because of this incident and because of memories that we still have of the protests in the wake of George Floyd's murder. Alex and the folks in his media have been successful in branding those protests as riots that left multiple cities mostly burned to the ground. So it's important for him to do whatever he can to associate the current situation with images that he's created about that past situation. So Minneapolis is being worked in when he's talking about L.A.
Yeah.
Quite heavily.
For sure.
And so I think... obviously, a lot of this isn't super surprising.
Sure.
In terms of the angle that Alex is going to take on this.
Yeah.
But it does imply a fundamental betrayal of a lot of what he's supposed to believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
hard not to just... I mean, that's...
Done and done.
It's a bottom line kind of thing. It's like, you, man.
Done. Boom.
So like I mentioned at the beginning, there's the protest thing going on that Alex is coming in on Saturday to talk about, but also Elon Musk.
Sure.
And it's really cool that he has deleted his tweets.
And so I said, first thing, we leave the courtroom at 3:00, and I say, probably a nervous breakdown by Musk. And I really appreciate Musk, and I know that he's not been appreciated or really defended by the administration. It's been a big fear of mine that this could happen. I'm no Musk MO. But now that he's come out, so let's get to this now. Now that he's come out last night and deleted the tweets attacking Trump, that is a retraction, basically.
And
that's a really good thing.
Is that how it works?
Because as I keep hammering for really 6 months intensely, if we let the Democrats in the deep state attack Musk and destroy him and take down his companies, everybody else who isn't even close to him in power and intellect of the titans around Trump, I mean, you know, let's say Trump's 1,000 feet tall politically with power, Musk is 500 feet tall. The next biggest political muscle, money muscle around Trump, which is nothing compared to what the globalists can throw with all their collective, 90%+ of the billionaires are against Trump and what we're doing. The other muscle around Trump are like 20 feet tall. I mean, if
that's
they
tiny.
Can target Musk and run him off or hurt him so bad he pulls out of the great job he was doing, just Judge Treebot's fruit's amazing. They go after the next domino and the next domino, like V, but from a bad V perspective, when they get Musk. They get it all.
They get it all.
They get it all.
Save the cheerleader, save the world.
Yep.
They get Musk, they get it all. So what Alex is saying is absolutely not true. Trump has wide support among billionaires. But leaving that illusion to the side, what Alex is expressing is pathetic. Elon is rich and powerful, and he's doing the things I like. Therefore, there's nothing he can do that we shouldn't make excuses for. He's a virulent transphobe who lets Nazis run free on Twitter, so we have to accept when his feelings get hurt, he might allege that the president's a pedophile on the social media platform that he owns, then delete the tweet later and expect everyone to move on. Alex can talk about this shit all he wants, but there's no way he can explain to the audience why Musk should ever be trusted again. In their minds, the information he posted about Trump is not true. And Alex's explanation for that is that Elon posted this untrue stuff to try to hurt Trump because he felt like he wasn't appreciated enough. Even if you buy this spin, Elon's a piece of shit character who's going to do something like this again. He's unstable, and if you don't stroke his ego enough, he'll weaponize the social media site he owns against you. And now Alex expects people just to forget about this whole thing because he deleted some tweets? In this narrative, Elon looks like an unhinged, dangerous child, and Alex looks like either a stone-cold idiot who thinks that the ends justify the means, or he's a shameless liar who wants that dangerous child's money. This is not a good look. All in all, this is the wrong path to be on, and the fact that Alex needs to make a choice of how to play this is the result of him making bad conspiracy decisions many steps back. When David Icke assessed that supporting Elon Musk was bad, this very situation is part of why that was the right move. And Alex really only has himself to blame for being in a position where he has to carry water for the world's richest dipshit. He should have known. These are the risks you take.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if we need to recalibrate our understanding of how the future is going to go. Because this is... So, okay. So, like, take a Greenwald, right? Now, a Greenwald, back in the day, you're like, he's throwing his journalistic credit, blah, 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 blah. You know, you do the whole thing. But that's because we think that the world we're going to be in is going to give a shit about that shit.
Right.
But we were way wrong. What he did was the right thing, which is throw all that shit away and stop wasting your time. Kowtow to the dictator so you don't get, and then now he's crushing it. Like, I think maybe he'd made the right move and everybody... So we need to recalibrate and say that all journalists made the wrong move by not doing that.
I guess it comes down to what right is. You know, like, how do you configure that?
Mm.
My take on it is, yeah, you maybe make a good point about the Greenwald.
Sure.
But I still don't know if that applies to Alex.
That's fair.
Because... when I say that Alex made the wrong move, I mean from a narrative consistency standpoint.
Sure, 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 sure.
If he wants to be the thing that he pretends to be, which has, like, God told me to go on this mission, and all, he can't have character inconsistency.
Yeah.
He going against Musk was the right thing for the character he pretends to be to do. And because he didn't, he's now in a situation where he has to clean up.
Yeah.
It may be ultimately the right decision to make because Elon might give him a ton of money at some point. So maybe it is the right thing to do on that in that kind of calculus.
Right.
But he'll never be able to credibly pretend to be the same person again.
No, no. I mean, you know... I wonder how important it is to be credibly pretending anymore.
Maybe not. Maybe it's not.
It's just if you believe it hard enough.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I accept that my point may be moot.
No. Yeah. I think I agree with your point. Yeah. That's where we're at. Yeah.
So, look.
Yeah.
Trump, he's not in that Epstein file. He isn't like Epstein.
Yes, but what? Why are we doing this?
Well, here's the thing.
Okay.
Trump, he likes to fuck older women.
Great. That's what I wanted to hear.
And I think Alex does, too.
Great.
I already knew the Epstein thing from all the information I know and what's on record is that Trump never did anything like that. That's not his M.O. I know the background. I know the type of women he likes. All
what's
of
off record,
see then? What he likes. It's the opposite of what a pedo wants. Like, big, powerful, by big, I mean, intimidating women. I've never been around a woman, so it's, I mean, really, the hotter the woman, the less I'm intimidated. Most men get intimidated. With her, it's like, whoa, it's intimidating. It's like, So, guys that like flame-throwing, you know, women, I mean, 1,000-horsepower women, aren't into little girls. Those are people that are insecure, they want power, they're weirdos. Because I know, I like the full 1,000 horsepower woman. You know, that mature, powerful, fire breathing, tear your clothes off stuff. And so, you know, I mean, I very early figured that out when I was a teenager and I was, you know, going out with girls a few years older than me, and I was like, well, this is great. And then I was dating college girls when I was like 14. I was lucky. I looked a lot older. I was like, well, this is a lot better. And then I was like, well, wait a minute. I'm 20. Now I'm dating 35-year-old women. They're in their prime. I mean, about a 35-year-old woman, anybody will tell you, that's the prime right there. And they know how to take care of you even a lot better after that. But, you know, the point is that, you know, I mean, 45-year-old woman, they're really hitting the peak of their peak. I mean, but just, you ask how I know this about Trump. Roger Stone was his wingman over 40 years. That's really what Roger Stone is.
Hey, man, you sound real gross. I feel like it's such a strange thing to be trying to defend the idea that Trump is a pedophile.
Yeah.
By getting, like, into a horny conversation about you fucking older women as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so weird.
Yeah, you know, I kept, here's what I kept imagining as I was listening to this in order to avoid negative thoughts. I kept imagining a giant, what are those like, those diggers, you know, like the big ones with the like claw thing,
yeah.
And then they dig into the ground. So I imagine that one starting in 1913 or so and working nonstop until now. And it, so the hole is just so deep. And then I just threw Alex in there. I just threw Alex in this 100-year-old hole. I assume that the machine is still at the bottom.
See, my thought on what you were saying is that Alex is like operating the digger. He thinks he's not digging a hole deeper for himself.
Right. No, that would be a good metaphor. I was just going pure fantasy.
Sure.
I was just enjoying my life.
I think when you're covering the Epstein story, generally speaking, don't get into your fuck stories.
No, it's great. Like, it makes everybody feel happy.
No. It's gross.
At a sexual assault trial, it's always a great idea to talk about how you're a Lothario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Alex keeps talking on some of this kind of sexy talk.
Great!
And I think there's an implication here that he and Rogan fucked.
Great!
Yeah, Musk is saying, few things could have convinced me to agree with my position more than Adam Schiff agreeing with me. So that's last night. So Musk is getting it.
Is he?
And he's a maverick. He gets pissed. I knew when the Democrats came after him with censorship and attacks and kidnapped his son and, you know, he almost died of a heart attack from a COVID shot. I said, let them keep messing with him. I knew when they started messing with Joe Rogan. I knew the inside baseball behind the scenes that people still don't know this. He asked me not to tell anybody. But in the last 5 years, I said, my God, just keep attacking Joe, liberals. Try to bully him, make him work for them. I said, just keep doing it. Because I know Joe for 26 years. God, longer. I remember since 98. Been friends since about 99. I mean, we've had some fun. I'm back. I wasn't married and he wasn't married. We used to go have some fun. I've had some fun with Joe. Good old red-blooded American fun. Give Hunter S. Thompson a run for his money. I'll just leave it at that. But
wait,
where we're at here is the precipice of Valhalla or hell.
Sure.
Tell you what, we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. You know what? We wound up in those Epstein. Oh, shit. God damn it. I forgot.
I think that Alex's like red-blooded American man fun is his version of saying like no homo.
Right.
Except it makes me more suspicious.
I mean,
they probably had like a three-way or something.
Sure, but who? What red-blooded American male hasn't Eiffel Towered with Joe Rogan?
Sure.
What? Who among us?
Among us?
Yeah. Let he who hath not sinned cast the first stone at Joe Rogan's balls.
And Eddie Bravo was watching, having theories about how he's got. You think that your balls are a sphere. They're actually flat.
They're actually flat,
you got
balls.
Flat balls.
You got flat balls. Let me hit them with a rock. I'll show you.
Yeah.
All right.
So back to more serious territory. Alex gets into discussing how he has saved the world from nuclear war.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the number one guy. I don't want to be the big target. I want you to grow up and get your head in the game so we can get this information out, and I'll retire when I see enough people that know how to get this done. Because I had to come out and say, hey, we don't want World War III. Get the message to Trump that his briefers aren't telling him about a doubling of attacks inside Russia by Ukraine and the NATO group and Lindsey Graham over there and all the rest of it. And I guarantee you, when Trump learns this, he isn't going to escalate some big attack and authorize long-range attacks in Russia, which is full war. And then everything I told you came out. I was trying to stop a goddamn fucking nuclear war. And you lazy, stupid people on the left and the fake right and the fake populist that just always want to say they've got the answer and they know what's going on and nobody's pure but them. And misrepresent. Jones is with Putin. Jones is spouting Putin stuff. I said it a week before Lavrov said we've now learned Trump was giving false briefings. I said it first. I don't get stuff from the Russians. They get it from me. I'm in command. I'm in charge. And when I say that, out of everybody out there, everybody, I'm the most dialed in. I have the most answers. I have the highest accuracy rate. And I don't say that because I'm on a power trip. It's the obvious. It's dangerous as hell. And I don't want to be in this position. But I've got to be in this position.
I think that clip gives a perfect glimpse into Alex's mind. And to fully understand what you're seeing, it's important for me to take you back a little bit earlier in this episode. Alex had just gotten done rambling about Elon Musk and a hunting video that Alex remembered shooting a long time ago. And he said this.
And so I'm just being completely real with everybody today. I'm always tell the truth about issues, but, you know, I'm like, why don't I just really, and I've done this years ago, why don't I just really be what I'm like? This is what I'm really like. And by that, I love humanity, and I love truth, and I love justice, and I love kicking tyrants' asses. I don't like people to pull punches and think about, well, if I say this, what's going to happen?
That clip, I think, whether it's sincere or not, Alex is trying to put on the facade of being the real Alex on this show. And I think that the last clip, it really does illustrate an essential piece of the Alex that exists inside, that he probably does try to restrain because he knows it's nuts. I'm specifically talking about the part where he's angrily yelling about how he doesn't get his talking points from the foreign minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov. Lavrov gets his talking points from Alex. This is such a ridiculous thing to say, but I think it accurately conveys Alex's sense of self-importance. He gravitates towards flagrant liars like Roger Stone and Steve Pachenik because they're willing to stroke that sense of self-importance, essentially feeding into Alex's need to feel like he's decided the course of history. Those dudes are using Alex because, much like he thinks that Elon Musk is a weapon that his team can use against the globalists, Alex is a weapon that these folks can use against democracy. And on some level, I'm pretty sure that Alex understands this dynamic, and it's intolerable for him to accept, which is why that last clip comes into play. He has to believe that he's the source of all truth in the world, because the alternative is to accept that he's been duped over and over and over again. If I were someone like Lavrov, I would hear Alex say that kind of thing and just laugh. You wouldn't ever have to give him a dime, and you could be pretty certain he's never going to be a threat to you, because Alex believes that your actions are an expression of his influence. When you do things that he wants you to, it's because you listen to Alex. When you do things that he doesn't want you to, it's because Alex's sagely guidance didn't get to you in time. By imagining himself as a figure with any power in this situation, Alex has captured himself in a net where he will have to hurt himself severely if he wants to change any of the allegiances that he's set up. He's trapped, largely by this fraudulent belief that he's in control. I tell the Russians, I'm in control. I'm in charge.
Yeah, I mean, the quite simply, the oldest of old truths is maybe just simply... people in charge never have to say it. You don't have to say it.
Especially that angrily.
You don't have to. If you have to say, I'm in charge, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You're not.
Yep.
That's the problem.
This is, it's sad.
Yep.
It's a very sad image because there's a, when he's yelling, I'm in charge.
Yeah.
What's going on is he's angry at how out of charge he is.
Yeah. I mean,
and that's really what's being expressed through that anger.
It is. It is like a like film noir in the 40s. This is when Humphrey Bogart would slap you in the face. Get it together, man. Like, that's what it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or give you a bottle.
Yeah. Or smash that on your head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Alex discusses the need to defend Musk. And we heard a bit about this on the last episode.
Interesting.
But there's something that he says here that I think is super telling.
Okay.
The Republican leadership is saying, we'll teach you, Musk. Think you're going to come in here with Trump and help him get his job done? We'll just take everything you got away. And again, Tesla's 80% of the money. But you see what they've done there. And, you know, oh, the media, oh, Trump's getting rid of his Tesla. That's not exactly what he said. But this is just really sad, folks, and really dangerous. There's a lot of other powerful people that want to be good and want to fight for Team Humanity are watching this. And they're going, you know, if they do this to Elon Musk, they'll do this to me. So I better just sit on the bench over here.
That clip is short, but it's so key to understand Alex's continued support of Musk. There are a number of reasons that Alex has given for why defending Musk at all costs is important, but this is probably closest to the real one. Defending Elon Musk is essentially a trial run that he thinks he can entice other billionaires to support his media operation if he does a good enough job. It's almost like a job interview or proof of concept that Alex is deeply invested proving can work. If this media ecosystem he's built and inspired can protect Elon when Elon is acting so flagrantly out of control, so transparently corrupt, then it could be a pretty useful thing for other corrupt billionaires who want a media organization to defend them. Alex is saying that these other corrupt billionaires would love to wade into the waters of extreme right-wing activism, and they're watching Elon closely to see how supported he is by the extreme right-wing media ecosystem. If this media space is just going to turn on Musk when times get hard, then how can they possibly trust that this media space won't abandon them too? Slavish defense of Musk is an investment to prove to these other billionaires that you'll have their back too. Alex came up in a media landscape that was all about astroturfing. The John Birch Society was a fake grassroots organization that was funded by giant manufacturing interests, largely to suppress movements aimed at workers' rights and other social trends that hurt business interests. His family was raised and suckered into that, and he took that on as the real version of conservative populism. In contrast to that was the predominant right-wing media that dominated the field that Alex wanted to be in, namely radio. Folks like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck were popular and they had audiences, but their stature was greatly exaggerated by giant investments by right-wing billionaires. Their radio ads were subsidized to allow for much easier national syndication, and their profile was boosted by bulk purchase of their books to create the illusion that they were popular, best-selling authors. They were given shows on Fox. All of this network was essential to elevating that.
It was a synergy.
It was all fake, and that was the world that Alex began his career in, but he was outside of it. He wasn't in the mainstream of billionaires propping up his show. He wasn't allowed into these reindeer games, but he was kind of playing the same game, just with losers, like Ted Anderson.
Right.
So he was doing the same thing, pretending to be the complete opposite, but really just being a low-rent version.
Sure. I mean, hey, listen, everybody wants to be Dave Mercedes. Nobody wants to be Dave's the two used car lots.
And that's Alex's two used car lots.
Yep.
So I have a theory, and this is just a theory. I want to stress that.
Sure.
It's something I've been feeling for a while, though. And the mentality that Alex is expressing after the Elon tweet really makes me think that there could be something here. Months ago, I said on our show that I thought someone had maybe told Alex to clean up his act, as if he were doing a test run for something bigger, like a job on a more mainstream network.
Mm-hmm.
He stopped doing his show wasted or possibly on stimulants, he lost a bunch of weight, and overall he tried to make himself much more presentable. He's still often saying insane things and talking about how God gives him visions, but there's less chaos, less hatchet throwing, and less storming off the show when he just gets in a little bit of a bad mood.
Hmm.
I don't know if there's anyone who's actually told Alex that if he cleaned up, they would consider funding his show, but I strongly suspect that someone has given Alex that impression. It could be like a supposed middleman like Roger saying that if Alex makes himself a little less toxic, he could get a show with Mike Lindell.
Sure.
Or maybe Tucker has been like, you can come be on my network. Sure. If you just cool it a little bit.
Right.
Or maybe there's someone like Rogan explaining to Alex that if he plays a little bit of ball, there's hundreds of millions of dollars waiting to be had.
It's there.
Alex knows that entire media ecosystems are buyable. It's the environment that his career started in. So my theory is that Alex has been convinced that defending Elon Musk is like a trial period where he thinks that he's showing other billionaires what he can do.
Sure.
And this is why the defense is so important. It's very close to exactly what he's expressing in that clip.
Yeah.
There's tons of other powerful people who are watching us defend or not defend Elon Musk, deciding whether they want to get involved.
Sure.
And getting involved is giving money to Alex.
That is generally how it works.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. It feels like it fits.
Yeah. I mean, the problem here is, I think, probably the problem of any... I suppose it's the breakdown of all possible communication is that this is the possibility of a SponCon assault. You know, like, literally my defense of this guy is bought and paid for, which makes it so why would I ever believe if you were doing it just for free? Mm-hmm. Like, ideologically, I'm defending this guy. Doesn't matter to me because that guy bought that guy. You know what I'm saying? So if the SponCon is the same as what you're saying, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, and I think that that's one of the reasons that Alex's world is so so weird on that front and actually kind of vulnerable to that. Because, like, okay, yeah, sure, fluoride's in the water and it's all so bad, so you got to buy water filters.
Yeah.
Is Alex selling you a water filter because he believes that fluoride is killing everybody?
Right.
Or is that a convenient part of his narratives because he has a water filter salesperson?
Right. Right, right, right.
I know we've seen a lot more talk about economic stuff and the financial collapse that's coming when he has an active gold sponsor.
Yep.
So, like, I don't know. What is authentic to the belief and what is SponCon? Alex's show is almost like a perfect place where those two things become identical.
Right, right. I mean, I think the concept originally was, I believe the fluoride, while I'm here, I might as well make some money off of this belief.
Maybe.
You know, like that concept of, if I'm doing this and the end result is people need this, then they might as well get it from me.
Sure. But
now it feels like the opposite is true, where the water filter guy is coming to you and saying, for $10,000... you will believe that fluoride is killing people. You know?
I mean, in 2010, Alex was certainly promoting CMOS.
Sure.
So much.
Sure.
I certainly hear a lot of ads for bone broth these days.
Well, everybody needs broth in their bones.
Yeah. I think that you've touched on something that is really, like, essential to why Alex would be a attractive thing to somebody.
Sure.
That would, because the SponCon element of it is so insidious.
Yeah.
By design, by the format of the show.
Yep.
That the audience is kind of inured to it.
Yeah, it renders it meaningless. Everything is SponCon and nothing is SponCon. It renders it meaningless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Trump, you know that guy?
I've heard of him.
President.
Yep.
He does not get presidential briefings anymore because they're all bullshit.
Fair enough.
There's no level of bigger BS. That's why Trump doesn't really take the briefings anymore, because he knows it's bull, but then he's only watching Fox News. He watches this show sometimes and others, but, I mean, he calls it the clips that give him clips. You know, Barron shows him or Don Jr. And, you know, we can get him on the phone, too, and Roger talks to him almost every day, but it's just, it's very serious. It's very, very dangerous, obviously. So that is massive, massive news. Now, let's go to something good Kash Patel did. And they're doing a lot of good. But when he does something bad and tries to tell us Jeffrey Epstein killed himself and it's open and shut, or that crooks acted alone, we know that's not true because they've seen the file. You got to talk about it. And that's coming up. But Patel, breakthrough, we found, it means they've raided, Fauci's phone and hard drive from early days of COVID.
So Alex can't praise Kash Patel for something good he's doing when he's also engaged in an elaborate conspiracy to cover up the death of Jeffrey Epstein. Alex is in a war between God and the devil. There's no gray area where the FBI director gets to be kind of good, kind of bad, depending on how Alex wants to tell a story. If Kash Patel doesn't have the courage to tell the truth about Jeffrey Epstein, then he doesn't have the integrity to be in the position of heading the FBI. It doesn't matter how much Fauci-related red meat he can throw to the right-wing media. His complicity with the Epstein cover-up is complicity with the devil, according to Alex. It's not that he has a different position on the Epstein case from Alex. It's that he knows the truth and is willfully covering it up in order to protect the devil. If what Alex is saying is supposed to be taken seriously at all, then Patel releasing some Fauci stuff is actually a negative, because that information is tainted by being connected to him, the guy who's covering shit up for the devil.
Yeah.
This is the problem with this black and white character stuff. You know, like, it's just, you can't. People are more complicated than that, and God and devil stuff doesn't allow for it.
I mean, by virtue of releasing Fauci and not Epstein, then you are rendering the Fauci stuff a distraction from the Epstein stuff, which means you should be madder for releasing the Fauci stuff.
You should. Yep. And I think that choosing the venue of going on Joe Rogan's show to discuss this Fauci stuff
Christ.
Should make you think, oh, if this is a distraction, then Joe is the perfect place to for the FBI to do a distraction.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, weird.
It should all fall apart instantaneously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Alex plays a clip of Patel on Rogan's show.
And that's the best advice. You know, real friends, people that care about you, will tell you when you're doing something bad. And I said 3 weeks ago, them coming out and pushing all this bull, the crooks acted alone and Epstein killed himself and all this. Nobody's buying it. And Rogan didn't buy it. But this is really, really, really good news. So here is Patel on Rogan talking about Fauci.
Fox News alert. Cash Patel may have just uncovered the holy grail of cover-ups.
They had always been looking for Fauci's original phone, and or not original, but phones and devices he used while he was Fauci back in Trump One during COVID. And nobody had found it. Till 2 days ago.
Really?
Yeah. Now, look, your audience and everybody listening to it is not, shouldn't jump to the conclusion. Everything's in there. We'll look at it. We'll pull it. We'll rip it, as we say. And maybe it's deleted. Maybe it's not. But at least we found it.
So Alex is playing a clip of Jesse Waters' show on Fox, who is playing a clip of Kash Patel on Rogan. This is a good illustration of what lazy shitheads these people are.
Mm.
But I want to really zoom in on what we're listening to there. This is the director of the FBI appearing as a guest on Joe Rogan's podcast, discussing alleged evidence that he's uncovered related to Fauci's actions in terms of the COVID pandemic. It's not clear if there's an actual investigation that this is a part of, and if it is, then this is the FBI director gossiping on a podcast about evidence that hasn't been made public. Further, this is the director of the FBI saying, "We found Fauci's hard drives, but I'm not going to tell you what's on them." This is him revealing a blank slate for Rogan and his audience to draw whatever conspiracies on they want. This is conspiracy baiting. On top of that, Patel, in his capacity as the FBI director, is saying that a possible reason that this evidence won't end up proving all their COVID conspiracies is that Fauci may have already erased stuff from them. This is providing a preemptive explanation for why this evidence proves the conspiracy, even if it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's almost impressive how unsuspicious Alex is about this interview's existence, its contents. It's crazy.
Yeah.
This is such an indictment of his fake character.
Yeah. You know, it was a good respite we had, because you almost forget, right? Like, those first four Trump years, it was like the most horrifying thing that ever happened, but then the end would be yakety sax and everybody'd be running around like, you know, like this is objectively a horrifying thing that Cash Patel, just being on Rogan is objectively horrifying. But he's also this, he's also a wacky idiot. Like, what is happening?
The only way for this to be acceptable as a thing that happens would have to be that Rogan burns his ass.
I mean,
like, straight
literally
up
burns his ass,
holds his feet to the fire about all kinds of things, not letting him, like,
sure.
Rogan would have to prepare like crazy,
yeah,
in order to do this interview responsibly. I don't think either party would be willing to do that or is even up to it. But yeah, the fact that this exists is like, It's like Yakety Sax, but like off tune.
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
I mean, and it's so, like, just be, oh, will anybody at the FBI ever help accountable for all this shit? No? Okay, well, then we're ending the interview. Goodbye.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Hey,
we're wasting our time.
Well, I've got the FBI director in here, hits the blunt.
Right.
My friend Eddie would like to ask you about the world and my balls being flat.
Yep.
Like,
yep. Great. Cool. We got it. We're doing it.
So we get back to the conversation about the L.A. protests.
Sure.
And Alex loves what the cops are doing.
Mm.
Again, the Democrats war gamed in August of 2020 that if Trump won, they were unable to steal it, they were going to activate illegal alien and Black Lives Matter and Islamic riots around the country, have blue cities and blue states secede, and cause a civil war in America. And then when Trump, they were able to steal it, they put that on ice. Then they, when they knew he was going to win because the poll numbers were so powerful, they began to hype, well, if he gets in, he's going to kill the migrants. Tom Homan's going to mow them down. They would never do that. But they're going to elicit riots. And yet all these mayors and governors saying they're going to do it. Colorado, you name it. Illinois, the mayor in Chicago and the governor. And then the last piece is, well, they'll provide the false flag to mow down the illegals. And I said, they'll also start, you know, killing Jews and stuff to get the heat up there.
Sure. Got to heat that up.
Well, now thousands of people descended in L.A. and attacked the ICE headquarters, attacked police, attacked everybody else for hours, knowing the police would finally have to respond. And when the local police and the feds responded, they then jumped on their cars. They then attacked them, trying to get somebody hurt. And then the leftist media went, oh, my God, a man died when he was run over by ICE. The guy jumps on the van. He wasn't even hurt. He walks off. But that's just them, again, classic Black Lives Matter thing, trying to get everybody angry to get riots going. They've had internal antibody documents for decades leaked. That's what they do.
So it's pretty easy to see that Alex supports the police response in the L.A. protests.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, there was a car set on fire in Compton, and people had thrown some stuff at cops, which Trump and the folks in that media were calling lawless rioting. The situation was exaggerated greatly, and in response to the threat the protests supposedly had, Trump federalized the National Guard, even though the governor of California said no. In discussing this situation, Alex hasn't even brought that aspect of this up yet, and this is supposed to be a major issue for him. He spent entire days of his life yelling about how presidents can't federalize the National Guard, even in the context of national disasters, unless explicitly asked to by the state's governor. That's one of the biggest indications of a police state being put on the public, when the federal government assumes control over these entities like the National Guard. When Alex is doing this episode, Trump hadn't yet said in the literal Marines, but it shouldn't matter. Where things stand now should be so far past what Alex can accept, and we clearly see that he doesn't just accept it, he supports it. He can rationalize this shit by pointing to fake Soros Antifa contracts that one of his employees found on 4chan, but it doesn't change the fact that Alex Jones built a career pretending to be an expert on the police state only to support some of the clearest police state actions of our lifetimes. And I need to be totally clear about this. Trump called in the National Guard against the wishes of California's governor and LA's mayor and then sent in Marines. The governor filed suit against the Trump administration and the court found Trump's actions to be illegal. This decision was appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court in a case that's still pending. In this appeal, Trump's lawyers have argued that courts cannot review the president's deployment of troops on U.S. soil. Brett Shumate, the lawyer for Trump's DOJ, was asked if the president were to send in troops and give no justification for why they did so. He replied, quote, there's no role for the court to play in reviewing that decision. This is a government that's asserting some terrifying power and framing it in very irresponsible ways. For instance, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem said that Trump was sending in these forces to, quote, liberate the city from the socialists. We all know better, and the person who most knows better is Alex Jones. He's made millions of dollars and created multiple documentaries fear-mongering about the very actions he's eagerly supporting now. Pretending that some protesters deserve being treated like they're in a police state doesn't let you then endorse a police state. And I hope, like, honestly, the only thing I can wish for is that he actually is tortured by his conscience. That's maybe my only hope that I have in life now is that he actually recognizes what a piece of shit he is.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck with that.
Mm. Yeah. I'll have to make peace with that probably not being
yeah.
the outcome.
That's the problem.
But this is fucked up.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. It's fucked up. I don't know. Like, I don't say, why say things? The things that I say will make people mad now, but then, you know, in a couple of years, they'll forget that I said them and they'll say them and it'll be fine.
Maybe.
And then we'll just move on.
Maybe.
Nothing I say, I'm good.
Would you like to record something that I will cut out and play in 2 years?
I don't know. We'll see.
So the issue here is that the protests,
mm-hmm.
they're going to lead to a false flag.
Yeah.
There's going to be some kind of a big shooting that makes it so Trump has to bring in the National Guard, which he's already done. Yeah, so that's coming.
They're gearing up for this ever. They're promising these different dates later in the month, the next month, to go totally ape. It's already started. As the summer cranks up towards somebody in a MAGA hat, somebody in a van, somebody in a parking garage shooting a bunch of them, and then that person conveniently gets killed, and then they're a Trump supporter, they're an Alex Jones supporter, they're an Elon supporter. It's all pre-baked, and I've been telling you as this moves because the Democrats war-gamed it and said they'd do this. And when they say out of a clear blue sky, Trump's going to kill migrants, ICE is going to mow them down at a protest, I said over and over again in the last 6 months, I said, ICE is not raiding these demonstrations because they're traps. They're getting them at work sites, bars, their houses, all of it. Airports, bus terminals. They're scaling up the amount of enforcers they've got because that had all been cut down to almost nothing. And they had a fake right-wing bitch to know they're not really doing anything. That was all a lie. So they're attacking from the left and the controlled right. And I said, then they're going to get so violent in these cities, like L.A., like Denver, like Chicago, I picked those, that then when they've got to come out, they'll try to provocateur something. And then as these get bigger, then they're going to roll out the white supremacist mental patient they've got ready to attack, or they can't get one to do it, they'll do it themselves, and then just, you know, kill some young punk and you know, they got a background on that they've been tracking and say he did it. And you got all these leftist videos of them in Minnesota attacking the ICE, and now any feds they see get attacked, and they try to do raids on kidnapped kids, and they're being attacked in Minneapolis, Chicago, everywhere.
Here you can see Alex doing his preemptive damage control, where he calls any potential violence someone on his side might carry out a false flag. You might also notice that again he's mentioning Minneapolis, which might become relevant a little bit down the road.
Mm.
But this is you know, boilerplate. Ish for Alex.
Yeah.
Like, he understands.
Yeah.
That there's a lot of people on his side who probably want to kill some people, and that would look bad.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess also just like, you know, more of a background, it's okay than in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So not as much of like a, hey, everybody. Like, sometimes in the past, there's been an underground, like, don't do this.
Yeah.
I'm telling you that this is a false flag, so you don't do this.
Yeah, yeah, for real.
For real, guys.
Yeah.
It'll be terrible if they make you do, you know, like that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And now this is very much like, hey, man, they're just going to false flag people. You can.
I totally agree with you, yeah. And it's a very difficult thing to exactly put into words. So I'm glad that you sort of touched on that, because it is almost like a let's get on with it.
Yeah.
The feeling that he has is more let's get on with it, gets a false flag going already.
We know.
To sometimes in the past where it's like, I'm actually kind of worried about this false flag
yeah.
happening. I don't want you to bomb a church.
Right.
You know?
Right. I mean, I don't want them to bomb a church.
Right.
Through you. Right. You. Yeah. I don't want you because of them.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that he's kind of eager.
Well,
anyway, there was that protester who got hit by a car.
Sure.
And Alex is saying that the media said he was dead.
Mm.
Let's play clip two, and then let's play the other clip of what actually happens where the guy jumps on the car and falls off and isn't hurt. But then in the news and out of the, you know, other groups, oh, a protester who tried to block an ICE SUV from leaving with illegals was run over and died of brain death. He died of brain death. He died of brain death. He's dead. But he's not dead. In fact, let's just go to that now. Here he is getting up, being fine.
So this headline that Alex is reading about the protester dying of, quote, brain death isn't from any media outlet. It's just a tweet from an account called Vaz USA, whose bio says, quote, thought-provoking news, views, and analysis. Proud to be conservative and Hispanic. Alex can't pretend that the media is lying and saying this guy is dead when all he's responding to is a random post on social media. This isn't even shooting fish in a barrel. It's standing next to a barrel. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, this is the guy who's pretending that Vladimir Putin takes his cues from him, and he's getting mad at a fucking tweet.
And then just, like, spiraling outward from there, being like, this is everybody. This mm-hmm. dumb tweet from this guy.
Right. Yep. It's a random account that in their bio says conservative and Hispanic. Yep. And Alex is saying this is what the Dems are saying.
This is what they're doing.
And then the vans came. Once the vans came, while we were in commercial break, they loaded everybody into the vans. I suppose that they were arresting. And then they pulled him away. So that was the guy. I guess he's okay, but he's up and at it. All right, boy, what a day here.
Well, according to the Democrats, he's dead. So.
Or this Twitter account.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, we've just entered, like, this kind of strange world where it doesn't matter who said what.
Yeah.
Like, Alex can just take this account and put those words, apply them to Antifa or the Democrats or socialists or Soros. It doesn't fucking matter. Nothing is real.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder how much of it, you know, is, like, real stuff is still real. You know, like people, real stuff is still real.
Should be.
But now there's just a flavor that everybody chooses to lay on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, is this so much that we need to worry about people believing exactly this shit? Or is this just like, they already believe in nonsense, so this is their flavor of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. This is crazy.
Well,
it's crazy.
Well, the things...
Dan, it's crazy.
It is pretty crazy.
It's crazy.
Well, the things that are real are real. You know, in...
Are they real?
Yes. In as much as, like, ICE is raiding workplaces.
Sure.
Let's say.
Yes.
And rounding people up. And who knows what kind of rights are being respected. And this is... Right.
Yeah.
This is shit. That's
yeah.
real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Alex is putting this fake version on top of it in order to make sure that people don't get mad about the real thing that's happening.
Sure.
So this attributing, like, oh, this protester got hit by a car and he's dead, the Dems are saying that, is meant to prime you and make sure that you, as an audience member, never believes anything that you hear from quote-unquote untrustworthy sources, like the Dems or
sure.
whatever.
Sure.
So if you hear about atrocities and abuses being carried out against these people, that's fucking just the Dems. They
yeah.
lied about that guy who got hit by a car.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic Dems.
So there is real still.
Sure.
But then there's also this.
Yeah.
And it is crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So who do you think, you know, like, who's the real victims here?
Ooh. And then, I'm probably going to go with straight white men, and especially the ones with a lot of money.
Yeah, more or less.
Okay.
ICE.
Yeah.
So if you read all the headlines, you'd think ICE just attacked. ICE is attacking. Brutalizing the poor illegal aliens. They're attacking them. They're attacking their cars. They're attacking their bodies. They're threatening to kill them. Saying they're going to blow your head off. We played those clips last week all over the country. I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to shoot you all in the head. And then it turns into ICE is attacking everyone. You don't hate the corporate media enough. Unbelievable. Union president on 44 arrested in Los Angeles ICE raids. Agents use military-style force against protesters at L.A. immigration raid. Oh, my gosh. Everyone's so concerned, fear, outrage over the evil military attack. They show you hours of them attacking the police and others. Meanwhile, Kilmar Garcia has now been officially charged in massive human trafficking for MS-13. The poor little angel.
Go back to, like, Alex's earlier career and imagine him doing that mocking voice about police using military tactics.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking insane.
Yep.
So we've already talked about this, but what Alex is talking about is that Abrego Garcia, he was pulled over for speeding in Tennessee in 2022 with 9 people in his car. There's no evidence that he was human trafficking and was let go with a warning because it appears that they were heading to a work site. After Abrego Garcia was wrongly deported to El Salvador, the courts ruled that Trump had to return him to the United States. Trump said he couldn't do it, and then the Supreme Court ruled that it was unquestionably illegal for them to have sent him there and that he needed to be returned. There was a specific order from a judge that he not be sent to El Salvador because that's where he fled from because his life was at risk as a child from the gangs and shit there.
Sure.
So deporting him to there was specifically forbidden.
Right.
Some people might think that it's possible that the pressing of these human smuggling charges on this guy now that he's been brought back to the United States and is a bit of a face-saving measure on the part of the Trump administration, but I don't know what the truth of the case is. Abrego Garcia pled not guilty, and I haven't seen any particularly swaying evidence that he is guilty, but I guess the government's word is good enough for Alex these days. No more of that insisting everyone's innocent until proven guilty.
I mean,
fuck it.
I'm of the opinion that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he's guilty or not. It doesn't matter.
We'll talk about that in 2 years.
I mean, I think we will, Dan. I think we will.
So someone who we hopefully won't be talking about in 2 years, is Alex's fill-in host for the Sunday night show.
Yes.
Now we're jumping to the 8th.
Okay,
Alex is off, and he has Chase filling in.
Okay.
And so Chase has his take on the National Guard deployment.
Okay.
Also, I wanted to pause it right there. As soon as I turned on this episode and it was, I wish you were here, I'm like, Alex isn't here. he's not playing this.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Alex Jones Show. I am Chase Geiser, your host for the next 4 hours. Obviously, a lot of amazing things have taken place over the course of the last few days. Basically, Los Angeles is on fire. An all-out New World Order globalist assault on one of our major cities here in the United States of America. Trump has unleashed the National Guard onto Los Angeles. I'm told that they're at least three locations, as many as 2,000 troops are to be deployed to restore order in the region. And Gavin Newsom is standing back and whining about this massive federal violation of states' rights. So I suppose in the mind of these leftists and the Gavin Newsoms and others, it would be better that we allow our major cities to totally burn to the ground.
These guys just need to admit that they were lying when they said they cared about states' rights, because their current shit is incompatible with the beliefs that they're supposed to have. For one thing, LA wasn't on fire. This is dramatic bullshit meant to justify Trump's overreaction, and Chase knows exactly what part he's playing in this game. He exaggerates the situation to create the appearance that Trump had no choice, and his violation of principles that InfoWars is supposed to hold sacred, it's actually an act of heroism. You don't want Trump to federalize the National Guard? What? Do you want L.A. to continue to burn to the ground? If there are instances where this sacred principle is violatable, then it's not a sacred principle, and you all were full of shit.
Yep.
These folks just want raw power and the exercise of that power over their enemies. When their enemies are in office, any single thing they do is a violation of the sacred contract that is the Constitution. If the Obama administration wants to run drills to practice interagency coordination during natural disasters, that's FEMA plotting to put all of Alex's friends into camps, and it is unacceptable. The Constitution is super important, and everything is a violation of it, because in that environment, Alex and his team are playing from a very weak position. They hold no power, and their only real play is to constantly point to the rule book and demand that their enemies play by the letter of their interpretation of the law. But now Alex's team is in a very strong position. Arguably, they have all of the power in the country, and it's Alex's job to justify the use of that power. The rule book really isn't important anymore, because it actually never was. The Constitution has served its purpose for Alex, and it would really only get in the way at this point. Don't expect him to be circulating any petitions to reassert the 10th Amendment anytime soon.
Mm.
That part of his career is fucking over.
Yeah.
Garbage.
Yeah, this one sucks. This one, they've absolutely, like, defeated the minds of so many people on cities. Like, they just don't understand. Like, my dad emailed me about some protest, and he's like, be careful. And in the explanation of the protest, it's like, there's 1,000 people. And I can't, to my dad, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
But to be like, oh, 1,000 people are doing thing in Chicago is like, who fucking cares? Well, fine. Go have fun. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, there's no danger.
Yeah, especially if, like, there's a protest that's maybe in Millennium Park or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's downtown. That's not going to be near your house.
Yeah.
And, like, we don't have to go on Lakeshore Drive. So even if they shut down Lakeshore Drive, your dad has no conception of how unimpeded.
No clue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just no idea that 99% of people in Chicago had no idea that it was even happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Even if the protests were about something that you disagreed with.
Yeah.
There's not really all that much.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Y'all have fun. You know, like, but to them, cities are an instant away from just Tinder, you know? And it's like, that's no one really cares, man.
Everything is soaked in gasoline.
Yep.
Just ready to go up.
Yep.
I think that honestly, the reason for that is social media, because videos circulate of tiny little things.
Yeah.
Where, like, a car gets set on fire or somebody punches somebody. And that comes to characterize, like, the entire city.
Yeah.
2 million people in Chicago are all punching each other.
It is, yeah. You can't get some people to understand scale if they just don't have an experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can you understand 2 million people being in a block?
Yeah.
You know, it's impossible to understand if you've never been there.
Well, it's also like a two-sided thing where you have the inability to really understand scale. And then on the other side of it, the bombardment of the out of scale videos on social media and memes and stuff.
Yeah, it's coming at you both ways.
Together.
Yeah.
So Chase is pretty into the police state, it turns out.
Sure. Why not?
I think this guy.
Why not?
Oof.
And in less than 24 hours after unleashing the National Guard on the city, the troops are ready and deployed, and order is being restored. But we've seen mob after mob, car burning after car burning, brick thrown after brick thrown, even protesters being run over, not because of any brutality from ICE, but because of their own just recklessness and violence and celebration of chaos. I remember time and time again during the presidential primaries for this campaign when the Nikki Haley's were running, we heard the same rhetoric from the left and the right that was opposed to Donald Trump. We heard that he was the chaos candidate. And now that he's finally restoring order in the United States of America, finally dealing with the fact that we have sponsored an invasion over the course of the last 4 years of our very own country, our very own political class sponsoring this invasion, now we are seeing what has to be done to rectify the issue. Now it is proven that there are sleeper cells to the tune of hundreds or thousands or even millions within
the
United States of America that can be activated by these NGOs. And folks, it is coordinated. This is not some spontaneous reaction to animosity toward ICE because they raided a Home Depot in California. This is just an excuse being used by the left to loot. I mean, why is it that they had to deploy the National Guard to the Fashion District of Los Angeles first? The Fashion District. Because this is an excuse to steal Nikes. It's an excuse to steal designer clothing. So we're going to be getting into all the latest.
I'm pretty shocked by Chase's eagerness to support the police state. Like, he's not being subtle about this shit at all. He's just straight up saying, bring in the troops to maintain order.
Yep.
Like, this is pretty crazy.
You know, sometimes I think about, like, what if I had a time machine? What would I do with it? And every now and again, I have this terrible thought, like thinking about how things are now. I'm like, if I go back to this, like, have you no decency, sir, time period, I could rule this fucking world.
Hmm.
Have you no decency? You better believe I don't have decency. Fuck no. And then they just crumble. Hmm. Like, this is what happens. This is what they were really after.
Yeah.
McCarthy, you gotta go further, man.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I mean, like, the civility is a lie, and it's a flimsy illusion that we've constructed our society out of.
Yeah.
But it is real, and it does work.
Sure.
It just turns out that some people can hack it.
I mean, yeah.
So, I don't understand fully what this story is supposed to be. Like, is there a sleeper cell of organized rioters or just people wanting to steal shoes?
Mm.
I don't know what I'm supposed to be afraid of. Like, is there terrorism or theft?
I don't care if Nike's not doing well.
Sure.
You know, I'm not on their team.
Yeah. I also don't know if Chase knows what the Fashion District is, but it's not like the high-end fashion area in L.A. It used to be called the Garment District, but some business owners came up with the idea to change the name in the 90s as a part of trying to revitalize the neighborhood. This isn't like Rodeo Drive or Melrose. Mm. It's name the fashion in the district. It sounds posh, but it's not really.
No, it's a French. It's a whole thing. Yeah.
The reason that there were protests in the fashion district is because it's mostly a wholesale retailer area. There are shops and stuff, but a lot of the businesses there are warehouses for apparel companies, and ICE began raiding some of these companies. Mm. For instance, according to In These Times, quote, roughly 24 garment workers were detained at an Ambiance apparel warehouse, which led to the president of the SEIU California, David Huerta, coming to the warehouse to see what was up, and then ICE arrested him. Mm-hmm. This is the president of the Service Employees International Union. And he came to check on what's going on with these workers, and ICE arrested him. Mm. So when Chase is being like, why is it in the fashion district? It's because there's a warehouse.
Yeah.
This is what that district is, not... what an asshole.
Yeah, you know what's always fun about this is, like, it would make sense if you genuinely believe that this is the way to accomplish what you want out of, like, an anti-immigration thing, which is more home... grown employment, yada 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 yada, right? If it was really about that, and you really believed that doing this would accomplish that, then you would keep track, you would have numbers, you would know, you would have, like, okay, well, we've got this many job openings now because we deported these people, so boom, let's come follow up next month, are you hiring people? You would do these things so that later, 3 years, four years from now, whenever stuff comes up again, you could be like, I know you think it's wrong, but at the very least, it works.
Here's
but
data.
The thing is, it doesn't even work.
Yeah, it is telling.
Yep.
So Chase is a fucking idiot.
Yep.
I've danced around this a little bit, and I will be the first person to admit that I was drawn in by his Brendan-like charm.
Sure.
But this dude is a stone-cold fucking dum-dum.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And we can experience that in his new revelation about the Jeffrey Epstein Kash Patel situation. Mm.
Now, at first, as somebody who considers himself an info warrior, after all, I do work for InfoWars. I am a host sometimes on InfoWars. My first inclination was, oh, my goodness, there are no heroes left. Even Bongino and Kash Patel sold out. But I'm sending clips of Bongino and Patel to people that I know in the space. I'm not going to say their names because I want to protect their reputation. Who are known experts on body language interpretation. And I'm saying, hey, what do you think of this clip? What is the draw from this clip? And my friend responds, somebody who's been involved in interrogations, getting information from serious violent criminals for an extended period of time, dealing with psychopaths for an extended period of time, testifying as an expert, appearing on major television shows and speaking events, talking about body language and how you can tell if someone's lying or not. He says, look, I was just as shocked as you are. But I don't see any indication that either Bongino or Kash Patel are lying in this clip. And I've been studying them very closely. I'm very familiar with their baseline. I don't know what's going on here, but it's something other than lying.
Possession.
And I start looking at this, and then I watch this conversation that took place between
demons,
Kash Patel and Joe
demons.
Rogan. And I like Kash. In fact, I think that his girlfriend went to my college. I think she started going there the year that I graduated.
That's why.
What?
And I like Bongino.
Why?
And I've seen Bongino cry about when his mother died.
That's why.
And I believe him, and I don't think it's a front or a fake. And a lot of the people that have worked with him have worked with him for a very long time, which is a good indication of positive character.
Is it?
A lot of turnover at InfoWars.
Isn't it just occurred to me? Yesterday, while I was watching Alex Jones do a Saturday transmission on at AJN Live on X, it occurred to me, oh my gosh, they probably came in to the FBI, immediately looked at the Epstein files.
Don't do this.
And then were told or realized that Jeffrey Epstein is in witness protection. And so now they have to push the narrative that he killed himself in order to protect the fact that there's some greater goal to be accomplished with WitPro. And I post something about this and it absolutely blows up on X. And in the replies, I just see so much evidence of this. And frankly, I'm not somebody who had investigated the Jeffrey Epstein stuff abundantly. I'm somebody who looked at it.
You're not? You're on InfoWars, buddy.
Yep.
So he's fundamentally very, very stupid.
Yeah.
Chase's premise here is that he consulted with a friend of his who knows body language, who watched Bongino and Patel talking about how Epstein killed himself, and said they're not lying. This is a really tough pill to swallow, because Bongino and Patel are supposed to be Trump guys, and all the Trump guys are supposed to think that Epstein was murdered, therefore they must be lying. And yet this body language friend said they weren't. So there has to be another explanation. Chase thinks about it for a while, and he has this revelation while watching Alex's dumb show. What if Epstein is in witness protection? Now, here's why Chase is stupid. If Bongino and Patel know that Epstein was in witness protection, then they would still be lying when they told everyone that Epstein killed himself. Patel literally said, quote, "You know a suicide when you see one, and that's what this is." Bongino said, quote, "He killed himself. You want me to get... I've seen the whole file. He killed himself." What Chase has done is he's introduced a non sequitur into his storyline. People are basically debating whether A or B is true. A is that Epstein killed himself, and B is that he did not. Alex and all his media buddies are insistent on B, but Bongino and Patel are saying A. It's possible that they're lying when they say A, but that means that you'd have to treat them as conspirators. And eventually, that means you'd have to treat Trump as an active participant in this cover-up, so that is not a good option. Plus, the body language guy says they're not lying about believing A. So Chase is saying, what about C? C isn't even on the table in the conversation. And if you think about it for just a second, it's actually already contained as a subset of B. It's inside B. It's not a new option. If Epstein is in witness protection, that means he didn't kill himself, and the story of the suicide is a cover-up.
He can't have killed himself if he is not dead.
Right.
That's rule number one of not having killed yourself.
Right. Yeah. So A or B, and your answer is C, but C is actually B.
Yeah. It's still B.
So dumb.
It's still B.
Also, it really should be obvious to Chase that if he pursues this line of reasoning too far, he's going to end up saying that Epstein's a hero in this story. I get why Chase wants to sound interesting and why it's really uncomfortable as an idea to say that Bongino and Patel are lying, but Chase doesn't understand the implications of the things that he's suggesting. This is what I'm talking about when I say that he's a good first step guy, but his shit falls apart really fast if you take a second to think about it. And the InfoWar is so based on not needing, like, real examination of the ideas that you put forth.
Yeah.
But this is just fucking dumb.
So I don't know if they do this anymore, because it's been a long time since I've actually sat down and read a newspaper. But they used to have a daily astrology thing.
True.
You know, they just have every day there'd be a, like, hey, you were born here, so this will probably happen. And they did that every day, you know, and I was always like, ah, that's fucking stupid, because of course it is. But now I'm thinking about it. Maybe that was like a nice little release valve for people to believe in bullshit without hurting themselves. You know,
sure.
Believe in nonsense like astrology and read your thing every day, and you'll be like, maybe stuff good will happen to me. But when we stop just allowing people to believe dumb nonsense that doesn't hurt them, then look at what happens.
Do you think that no one is into horoscopes
anymore? I think horoscopes are gone completely.
Okay, you're wrong.
Is this not true?
Yeah, you're wrong.
Oh, shit. Well, then I'm in trouble.
People just don't read the newspaper as much. Do you think comic strips are gone?
No.
Okay. Other things that were in the newspaper? Do you think box scores are gone?
I don't know if people have words or letters anymore. Is that still available to us?
Bah.
Okay, well, I knew it.
Unfortunately, that's an onomatopoeia, so that would be able to... You should write that down with letters.
Fuck.
So yes, letters still exist.
Nah, all right.
So Chase is a idiot.
Yeah.
He's created a non-solution solution to this issue. I hate this guy.
And I started looking into the witness protection program that exists both here in the United States of America as well as the Israeli one. And they'll do things like plastic surgery and change the way that you look so that you can hide in plain sight basically anywhere in the world that you need to in order to protect your identity. And then you look into the fact that he had Saudi Arabian passports with different names on them. And he was traveling all over the world, and he had multiple passports from the United States of America. And it's just all so bizarre. And then this week, Alan Dershowitz is coming out and saying that Ghislaine Maxwell should be pardoned because she was just as much a victim of Jeffrey Epstein as anybody else.
Dersh,
I'm thinking to myself,
still
why
got
are
it.
They calling for the pardon of perhaps the only person in the world that was important to Jeffrey Epstein, in the context of the fact that they're coming out and pushing that Jeffrey Epstein actually killed himself, when we know it's abundantly unlikely that Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. Oh, he's in witness protection. And maybe part of the deal was that Ghislaine would get out and be reunited with him somewhere else.
And why?
He's been changed.
What?
Even Cat Turd posted, and I know there was some controversy with Cat Turd this week. I believe Cat Turd is a good man.
Cat Turd's a good man.
I believe Cat Turd is a good man.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Cat Turd is a good man, and you have dragged his name through the mud, sir.
Senator. Senator, do I have you on the record that Cat Turd is a good man? What the fuck kind of romantic comedy ass plot is he trying to spin about Jeffrey
Epstein? It doesn't. Even if even one 100th of anything that he believes is true, it still makes more sense for the government to just murder him.
You bet.
It would be insane to do half of any of that for him.
Also, big piece of news for you. Not suspicious that Alan Dershowitz is calling for Ghislaine Maxwell to be pardoned. He is alleged to be one of Epstein's clients.
Yeah, he would be very much on that list. Yeah.
Yep, you don't need an elaborate explanation on this one. It's pretty simple. He's a creep.
I can't stress this enough about everybody who is saying they should not release the Epstein files. They are in the Epstein files. The end.
Well, I think that we're even a little bit guilty of this, not being on the Epstein files. But
we're not.
With the branding of that name,
yeah.
I think that the media has done a bad job of that. And I've been self-conscious about it when I've said the Epstein files.
Sure.
As if it's like a thing.
Sure,
a real,
sure.
Like, discreet, concrete thing.
Right. There's no safe with a little black book that has everybody who has ever been at Epstein. Yes.
Right.
I understand that concept. But, like, the general idea that was getting across is, if you are a person who's like, hey, we don't need to share any more information about Epstein, it's because that information is about you.
There's a strong possibility.
Yeah.
It's not definite. I can see a couple of other possible explanations that are a little bit crazy about, like, oh, global instability, blah, blah, blah.
Whatever you like.
I could see a couple of long shots.
Sure.
But generally speaking, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think it's probably... Nothing to see here means
safe
something
average.
To see here.
Safe batting average, I'm guessing, if that was the bet. Yeah.
Yeah. So Chase sucks. He's boring. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to go to the 9th now.
All right.
And this is day 4 of the Soros riots that threatened to destroy Los Angeles.
Right.
We're going into day 4 of the publicly funded by the Democrat and deep state Soros uprisings. The documents, the funding numbers, who's funding it, how they're running it is all public. We also have Democrat leaders, senators, congresspeople, mayors saying, oh, we run the rapid response force to ICE. The communist mayor said, oh, no, we are deploying. The city directs these people. Meanwhile, you have the backdrop of New Scum and the rest of them, Senator Murphy and others, saying this is totally peaceful. Not mostly peaceful. They're calling it totally normal. Illegal aliens running around, burning everything down, and communists and looting stores and beating and stabbing and trying to kill police, raining rocks down on them. And you know what's coming next. You know it's all in the Podesta battle plan. Somebody's going to mow down a bunch of them, and they're going to blame ICE. The bullets will come from behind the police, from a high-rise or an apartment complex or a parking garage or out of a van. They'll be found a dead Trump supporter. It's all been scripted, all been prepared, and I have compilations of myself in the last 6 months saying specifically, probably in L.A., probably in June.
Good for you. Don't think this is all boilerplate standard. This is what Alex does. But the one thing I wanted to point out from that clip is he's saying that, like, the mayor has alerts for the people to go and protest.
Sure.
She was in a press conference and was talking about how citizens have a rapid alert system that they've created.
Uh-huh.
It's not that... The government runs it and alerts people through it.
Right.
It's just a reality of solidarity that exists among people.
Right.
That people show up to protests because they've created these networks of early warning.
Yeah.
And so Alex is trying to say that the city and the state run these in order to do flash mobs of inauthentic or paid protesters.
Yeah.
And that's not what she says. But it's something that Alex repeats a lot.
It would be nice if there were an enterprising city official who's very interested in keeping everybody safe, especially ICE agents. And so they let everybody know where the ICE agents were at all times. There was a government service that just alerted everybody to, hey, there are ICE agents nearby at any time. That way they stay safe. You know what I'm saying?
I think this is a good idea. Keep them safe?
Yes, we have to keep the ICE agents safe. So everyone should know where they are at all times.
It's an interesting suggestion.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea.
So this is what we've got on our hands. Real insurrection. This is basically shit's going down.
Boy, we're a ways away.
No.
Long ways away.
No. Such a real, God, it's happening.
This is real insurrection. This is real criminal uprising by the Democratic Party with their plan to create nationwide chaos. This is just the trigger. And then launch it nationwide. And now we have Senator Murphy and others saying this is the beginning. They want nationwide uprisings, and it's already happening in Houston and Minneapolis and Seattle and Chicago. Feds going anywhere, even on drug raids, are being overwhelmed and attacked. Crowds come up and say, we're going to murder you. We're going to shoot you in the head and start throwing bottles at them, and the feds evacuate. Been showing you this for 2 weeks, and I told you, this is the buildup. This is the escalation, Antifa taking over campuses, all these attacks. How did we know exactly what would happen? Getting chills right now. Because John Podesta, in August of 2020, said if Trump was able to win the election and they couldn't steal it, a big article in the New York Times, that they had war-gamed, nationwide uprisings, blue cities and states all seceding and forming their new government.
So that's not true. But Alex talks about John Podesta's alleged plan all the time, but I would guarantee that he doesn't even remember basic details about that story. For instance, what was the name of the group that Podesta was working with? Do you think he knows? Gun to his head, I bet Alex couldn't remember it or name any other participants, because all that mattered was Podesta. He'd already become a huge conspiracy world figure because of Pizzagate, so including other figures would really be overcomplicating things for the audience.
It would.
You know how it is with ensemble casts.
Yeah. I mean, when you're adapting a novel, a lot of the times you'll condense characters. Maybe you'll take two or three people, and that'll just become one person. You know, it'll happen.
This takes me back to Jurassic Park.
Screenplays are time. Hey, there we go.
So this was the Transition Integrity Project, and their full report is easily available if you want to go read it. Alex is just making shit up because he wants to incite his audience to view anti-ICE protests as part of the globalist plot to launch a civil war. Then, maybe one of them will actually go shoot some people so Alex can call it a false flag, and Trump can use that as a justification to just militarily take over the blue states that are such a hassle.
Sure.
So this whole Podesta plan thing is half-cooked.
Okay. So, if I'm drafting our secession... All right. Obviously, we're taking Illinois.
Are we doing the snake style?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're doing Illinois.
So you wait. Or is it you and me or is it you and Trump?
Oh, that's a good question. Because I don't want everybody. Let's split it up. All right. Best of four. Who gets four best geographically nearby states?
What?
That's what I'm saying. Okay. All right.
How are we doing this draft?
All right. You know what? Never mind. I'm undoing it.
Okay.
We're undoing this draft. I can't work out that.
I thought you and I were just going to draft states.
No, because in my head, it wasn't like a split 50-50 kind of thing. And then that I realized that's where it was going to fall apart. I don't want to draft that many states.
But you said you would take Illinois first.
I would take Illinois first. Okay, I'm saying I'll take about four states.
I'm going to fill in the role of Trump.
Okay.
I take Texas.
All right. I'll take... Minnesota.
And let me be clear. I only took Texas defensively.
Yeah.
I did that because I didn't want you to be able to capture it.
You know what? Here's what we'll do. I'll take the Great Lakes, and then I'm out.
You can't take the lakes?
I'll take the lakes.
Aren't they part owned by Canada?
Mine. Mine now.
Do you mean the Great Lakes states?
Yeah, let's throw it all in there. Give me a big circle around the Great Lakes. We're going to get rid of the state lines. We're going to get rid of... I'm just going to draw a big circle around it. It'll be the Great Lakes Stan.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going with.
Great.
Yeah.
Why do you get to do that? I thought it was one state at a time.
I know. This draft idea didn't work out.
Right.
If I don't like
it. If you're playing Risk, and you can just say, I'll take a bunch of these countries to begin with.
But see, that's what you war for.
Right.
The war is to make your own lines.
Eventually.
Yeah.
But the starting position that look, it's going to be inconvenient. Maybe I end up with Michigan.
Sure.
But we got to go one at a time.
I don't know. It's going to be tough. Florida. Risk in just the United States would be a dark game.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they got rid of all the other countries and just the map was just the United States.
What's the Irkutsk of states?
What would that be? I-80, right? Okay. As it goes through.
Sure.
Yep.
So Alex talks a bit about the L.A. Situation. Police were overwhelmed.
Sure.
Meanwhile, the police say they're completely overwhelmed, and now in many cities around L.A., they're saying, we are not going to help. We are going to stand down. This is it. Remember, they control the blue cities. It's going to hit Austin. It's going to hit Dallas. It's going to hit everywhere. Almost every city is controlled by them with their DAs and their people in control. Our own reporter was killed by anti-America, pro Mecha La Raza, Mexican supremacist. And a black man who said he loved killing the white man. That's how bad this is. Where I sit. The crime rate's tripled since the communists took over Austin 5 years ago. The mayor, the DA, all of them. Actual avowed Marxist.
So the police in L.A. were pretty clear that they could handle the situation and they didn't need federal help. The governor is literally suing Trump for calling in the National Guard against his wishes, which pretty perfectly sums up the dynamic that played out. There's a protest locally in L.A. that has a couple of hotspots and that the police can handle. Videos of these hotspots circulate on social media, and then the right-wing pundits start sensationalizing them. They create the appearance that L.A. is on fire by pretending that the things captured in the little hotspot videos represent what it's like all over the city. And this false appearance gives Trump a justification to send in troops to quell this rebellion that doesn't really exist. The authorities on the ground in the state can tell Trump's folks, we don't need your help, but everyone can see these social media videos, and the drumbeat narrative put in place by the right-wing media is that it's complete chaos everywhere in L.A. Of course they need Trump's help, and if they're saying that they don't, that must be proof that they're secretly trying to help the rioters. Also, the crime rate in Austin hasn't tripled, and the people in office aren't avowed Marxists. Alex's employee, Jamie White, was killed outside his home on March 9th. Since we last discussed this story, there have been some arrests in the case. A 17-year-old named Eloy Camarillo has been charged in the case, and according to Fox Austin, he admitted that he was part of a group that wanted to steal Jamie's car and joyride it, and then shot Jamie when he caught them in the act. Another 17-year-old and two 15-year-olds were also arrested. All the stuff, other stuff there about being anti-American, Mecha, La Raza, Mexican supremacists, that's all coming from Alex's imagination. The kernel of information that he's working with that is true is that there was a rap song that was reportedly found on one of the suspects' phones that included the lyric, quote, white boy came outside, hit his damn ass with a 9. And it's interesting because he is white boy in the sense that he is a white person.
Right.
But his name is also white.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
I hadn't considered that.
So.
Oh, yeah.
There is an
A double entendre.
There's an open question if this is actually about his race.
Yeah.
Or if it's more of a direct call out of, I shot this guy.
Yeah, I mean.
Either way, not a great thing to put into a song.
Boy, you know, it's been a long time since I've run up on some crackers in City Hall, but what are you going to do, Dead Prez?
Look, these people are also 17 and 15. Is it awful?
No.
It's an awful situation, and, you know, it's not Mexican supremacists. This is not what Alex wants to make of it. Is not there. It's tragic.
Wherever you think Jamie might wind up, after his life. Do you think at the end of it, he's looking at Alex now going like, yeah, you get him, buddy. I think you're a good guy.
I would imagine. I hope not. I hope not.
Crazy.
So Alex plays a bit of a compilation of himself predicting false flags. Mm.
Right now, let's go to a short compilation. It's actually long. I'll play a few minutes of it. I'm going back over 6 months and through to today of me laying out exactly what is happening now and the final piece, the mass shooting or truck bombing. And they like a mass shooting, but because they can blame guns as well then, but they may go with a truck bomb because a smaller Merc team can do it, or you can even have a two-man Merc team do it and then use a driverless truck to roll it in, and they'll put a dead body of a MAGA person that they've drugged and taken over their identity. And then, of course, they'll find the ID and stuff in the bomb wreckage. So that's the secondary attack. The third attack profile is a mass shooting or bombing of a black church or college. They pre-program that. You've been warned. We're not playing games here. There's a reason they want me off the air, because I got their number. I got their ass. It's what I do.
So none of those things have happened. There haven't been mass shootings at the protests, except police firing less than lethal things at protesters or gas canisters. There haven't been any truck bombs deployed. Alex is playing a compilation of him predicting something that hasn't happened and insisting that everyone needs to treat him like he's a psychic. As it happens, a few days after this, there was a pretty big shooting, but it didn't go down like any of the scenarios that Alex described. So his psychicness might be a little bit off.
Hmm.
So there's going to be an uprising.
Sure.
That Alex is talking about. And you might see some things.
Okay.
And you should not be worried about them.
Okay, nice.
Because people deserve it.
Oh, good.
And they've got it set for this weekend as the start of the nationwide uprising, the Democrat Party groups, the Antifa coalition say. And then not this weekend, but the next one is the big one, they're saying. All this scripted, all this prepared. So we're talking about 13 days from now. In the latter part of June is when this is going to go absolutely next level. And they've already triggered these NGOs. They've already given them their orders. And so it's very hard to pull this back. And, of course, you have the illegal aliens and others bringing their children wrapped in Mexican flags to the violent mob riots, insurrections, and using them as human shields so they can then put that all over the Spanish-speaking media and wave the bloody shirt to cause more rage. If you have any deductive understanding or any logic, anybody bringing their child in a stroller to a burning city mob is a criminal, in my view.
Great.
Beyond disgusting, cowardly activity.
So this is a fun short-circuiting that Alex is demanding his audience do to their own empathy. If you see a bloody baby, your first reaction is probably going to be one of concern and pain. After all, this is the network that pretends to be obsessed with saving imaginary kidnapped children. But you have to understand that the baby deserves whatever happened, because their parents are only trying to use them to garner sympathy, and if you feel for this, then you're playing into their hands.
You are. You're going to lose.
This is disgusting shit.
Hey, that one's like scarily textbook, though.
Yeah.
The like, wow, doing the whole thing. Hey, if they're there with a baby, that's a criminal as far as I'm concerned. What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shoot him. Right. Who gives a shit?
I don't want to be the guy who brings up 1984 now. Yeah. I don't want to be that guy.
No.
I've not even done it once. We've listened to this man talk about 1984 all the time, and then he does that.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
He's cool.
Yeah, he seems cool.
Consistent and not a liar.
No.
So, look, these Democrats keep talking about wanting to fight.
Sure.
Not like,
do
but,
they?
But
I really feel like they don't.
Well, I mean, I think Gavin Newsom's probably made some comments lately.
I'm sure he has.
Wants to fight.
Yeah.
Not like the Patriots. The Patriots don't do that kind of stuff.
No, they don't talk about
fighting.
No.
And I have all these clips. I'll play them here coming up. Democrat leaders, senators, mayors, you name it, praising it. And Governor Newsom, about what a evil man Trump is, and Come get me, Tom Homan. Come get me. As he brags that it's all a big sanctuary state to protect this lawless activity. That's what Governor Murphy said. He goes, I got illegal aliens living with me. Come get me. I'm a human smuggler. Come get me. The mayor of Denver, we're going to have uprisings. We're going to physically block ICE when they come in here. Mayor of Chicago, we're going to fight you. The View, we're going to be ready to fight and die. Oh, no, it's not calls for violence or anything. Trump said go to the Capitol peacefully and protest peacefully on January 6th, but they banned him on Twitter and everywhere, so he couldn't be seen saying that. He put the videos up, but they took them down.
Is Alex really tone policing the Democrats about using terms like fight? This is silly, but more to the point, it has to come off as very un-alpha to his alphaness obsessed audience. Alex screams about how he's in a war and he longs for the sweet embrace of fighting constantly on the show. So if you're a listener, it should come off as really weak for him to be this sensitive about comments from Democrats. Plus, Alex sells shirts with Trump on them that say fight, fight, fight. And just before January 6th popped off, Trump said in his speech, quote, and we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. Two sentences later, he told the crowd to go down to the Capitol so they could help the Republicans, quote, try to give them the kind of pride and boldness they need to take back our country. So my point is that Alex can cut this shit right out, but also that he needs to put on his big boy pants. If he wants to live in a world where he gets to spend full segments of his show pornographically describing violence he wants to carry out against people like Brian Stelter, then he needs to suck it up and not be such a snowflake when other people are using the word fight. It makes him come off like a loser little titty baby.
Yeah.
And come on, man. Buck up.
I listened to him describe, like, viscera coming out of human beings' faces and or bellies, etc.
That he caused.
That he forced out.
Yeah.
Using physical violence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with the word fight. I'll live.
Calm down.
Also, it should be fairly easy to note that if you're not afraid of using the word fight, but you are very interested in using the words everybody be peaceful, you're probably lying. Yeah.
So we get to a clip from Newsom.
Yeah.
Because he's like, hey, come and get it.
Sure.
Let's go. Let's
I'm
rumble.
Sure. He's very strong.
And then this clip is just kind of confusing.
Here's Governor Newsom openly trying to foment rebellion.
Put your hands off these poor people who are just trying to live their lives, man. Trying to live their lives, paying their taxes. Been here 10 years. The fear. The horror. The hell is this guy? Come after me. Arrest me. Let's just get it over with. Tough guy. You know, I don't give a damn. But I care about my community. I care about this community. The hell are they doing? These guys need to grow up. They need to stop. And we need to push back. And I'm sorry to be so clear, but that kind of bloviating is exhausting. So, Tom, arrest me. Let's go.
The perception is that
a mob of four young men, two adults, two juveniles, three Hispanic, one black, executed our reporter in March for no reason. They've now been indicted capital murder. The reported shooter created a rap song bragging how he killed the white man. The others, we've learned, are Mechila Raza types that wear Mexican flags and Mexican masks and hate America. But now you look at the statistics of the illegal alien gangs feeding on everybody in this country and the crime waves. And just since they rounded up the TDA and MS-13 in Denver in the last 6 months, they've had a 60% drop in homicide. It's happening all over the place.
I have no idea what Gavin Newsom is supposed to do with Jamie White's murder, which happened in Texas, or Denver homicide rates, but I guess this is all really just an expression of Alex's xenophobia, so it is connected. All this is one story.
Yeah.
There's no publicly available information about two of the people arrested in White's case because they're 15 years old. Alex is taking advantage of that fact that the police, they can't release information on juveniles, so you can just make up whatever picture of them that he wants. And that other guy did record a rap lyric that I mentioned, but it's hard to say if it was a racial thing. He said, quote, white boy came outside. It could be a reference to his name. Like, he would presumably the guy who shot him would have seen a news story and been able to figure out Jamie White's name. So it seems like double entendre is possible. Who knows? As for Denver, their homicide and violent crime rates have dropped in the last year. The problem with Alex's explanation is that they've been dropping every year since 2020, so Trump's terrorizing immigrants isn't what's driving that drop. In many places, crimes increased in the aftermath of COVID, which makes sense. As time has gone on, the rates are dropping back to pre-pandemic levels, and Alex is playing a fun game where he pretends that moving towards a white nationalist state is really what's behind dropping crime, when it's really recovery from COVID.
Yeah, he's just doing lynching talk.
Yep. So we got a guy on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Alex was supposed to have Mike Flynn on, but his plane didn't land on time or something.
Okay.
So Alex has another guest on, and this guy, you know who he is.
Okay.
But I know him as the guy with a mustache, and I realize that you probably don't even know that he's got a big old mustache.
Nope.
He's a guy who's obsessed with race wars. Fellow by the name of Matt Bracken.
Oh, okay.
Matt Bracken has
did not know
books
he had
on this for decades. Incredible brain on this. Former Navy SEAL. I can't think of anybody better other than General Flynn to break down this. I know he's got my analysis points on this. I want to get his snapshot in the 5 minutes we have left. We're in a whole hour with him coming up and going through all of this, the latest developments. But Matt, quantifying, where are we right now? What do you expect to happen next? What should we be looking out for? What should Trump do?
We've only seen the kickoff, literally. We just saw the kickoff of the first play of the game. And the rest is going to happen. It's going to unfold. There's no putting a genie in the bottle. The genie is out, and it's not going back in. There are people in the Southwest, Southern California, who have been planning and waiting for this for decades. And they see this as like a Stalingrad. This is a do or die. They are going to continue this. If they are pushed off of one highway, they're just going to atomize and go into smaller cells and continue the anarchy, arson attacks, things like that. It's sort of like a puddle of mercury. If you have one big blob of mercury and you hit it with a hammer, you don't get rid of the mercury. You just split into a thousand little pieces of mercury. And that's what's going to happen when the National Guard confronts these guys. They're just going to move a few blocks away and start setting garages and empty cars on fire so that we'll get the pictures of arson attacks all night. This is going to escalate for sure.
So you got to contain it like mercury? I don't know. So Alex choosing to have Matt Bracken on here is an intentional inflammatory move. Matt Bracken is a man who's obsessed with the idea that a race war is inevitable, and he's someone who's prone to speaking pretty irresponsibly. For example, on December 31st, 2020, he took to Alex's show to advocate that Patriots storm the Capitol on January 6th, which went on to happen about a week later. This was really suspicious, and the connection this implied between Alex and foreknowledge about what his friends like Stuart Rhodes and Enrique Tarrio, as well as his former employee Joe Biggs, were planning to do that day was way too strong. Alex had to bench Bracken and pretend not to know him for a while until that whole thing blew over, and now I guess it's safe to have him back on again.
Yeah, we're good.
But he's a good hand in terms of civil unrest situations. He's going to over-dramatize everything, and the story will always have that racial undertone that Alex's audience craves. One of Bracken's big points on this show is that, like, Hispanic people in the LAPD can't be trusted to not be loyal to the protesters, and there's going to be a civil war within the police that breaks down on ethnic lines.
Cool!
Like, this dude is a fucking mess.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I think that it's a bad move to have him on. Because Alex is a guy who takes on some of the characteristics of the people around him.
Sure.
And so when you have a guy who's like, there's going to be fires overnight. This is just starting. They've been planning this for decades.
Sure.
Alex is going to ride that momentum.
All right. I'm going to make this announcement here. And I'm sure they'll have the corporate fact checker say it's not true because it hasn't been officially said by somebody. If you remember going back, when President Trump was president-elect and Biden started the authorization of massive heavy missile attacks inside Russia, I said within a week, Russia will say we're basically in World War III with the U.S. You would see other leaders say that, and actually 3 days later, they did say that. And we're in a war with Russia. You know, the New York Times a few months ago finally admitted that and said the U.S. ran the whole thing.
And 2 weeks ago, you had the U.S. envoy, General Kellogg, say, look, we are in a proxy war. We've been officially, you know, unofficially at war with Russia, and this needs to stop. So when I make this announcement, I'm making it first. The second American Civil War has started. You can mark it today. And it is the globalist and the internationalist and the BlackRock, Chi-Com, Radical Islamic, Communist, NGO Alliance that's losing its power worldwide, but now it wants to grab control of pieces of the U.S. and then totally open the door up to turn us into their new third world base. And then you have sane people in Europe, the United States, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, trying to get our governments back and trying to bring back basic civilization and due process and freedom. And Trump is the leader of that worldwide movement, 1776 worldwide. And people need to learn the players and learn what we're up against, or we're going to continue to have escalating crises and war.
This is completely insane. What does Alex think his audience will hear when he says that the Civil War has begun? How can this not mean that it's time to start shooting?
Yep.
And why are there so many countries involved in your Civil War? Is this some kind of globalist thing? What the fuck are you talking about?
No idea.
This rhetoric is insanely dangerous, and it plays hand in hand with Alex's preemptive damage control about calling all shootings that might happen against protesters a false flag. With one hand, he's insisting that the globalists are about to pull a false flag at a protest, and with the other hand, he's telling everyone that the war is on and it's time to shoot. There's no excuse I can think of to send this kind of messaging in tandem, except if you're interested in inciting people towards committing acts of domestic terror because you feel like you've laid the groundwork to where you could blame it on your enemies and use that terror you stoked to add to your own political power. I'm sure that at some other point Alex has said that a civil war has started and it's happening, but this feels unique. Like, this, mark the day, this, the civil war has started.
Sure.
That's like a guy saying, I see the whites in their eyes, go ahead and shoot.
Yeah, I mean,
it's crazy.
I would prefer if I was to hear somebody saying like, the Civil War has begun. I would prefer it if that was a person who was on the team that did not have any guns,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the one with a lot of guns, many of which are unregistered.
Yeah, I'm never thrilled to hear someone say the Civil War.
Sure. Begun. No, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Regardless of how many guns they have. I'm not.
That's fair
about it. So this is the wrong guest to have on while you're talking about how the Civil War has started.
Might be a little
Matt
bit
Bracken
off.
Fucking loves that shit.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And so he gets into how the information war is like really the most important thing right now for the Civil War.
We're going to have this very, the info war is going to be key here because people will have to understand this is an invasion. And, you know, whether it's an invasion like Normandy or whether it's an invasion of stealth where the fighters are brought across under Biden and 10 or 20 million to get their weapons once they're here, you know, it's still an invasion. And the guarantee clause of the Constitution gives the president not only the right, but the responsibility to repel an invasion. And the Alien Removal Act, which is on the books, also gives him the right to deport anybody, you know, any foreign male over the age of 15 who prevents a threat, you're gone. It's right in the Alien Removal Act. It doesn't require a declared war. There's the or clause in the Alien Removal Act, which is basically, you know, widens it wide open to where they will use it today. So the key thing is not to blunder in there heavy and, you know, like you conquer Baghdad, but then what, right? The key is going to be preparing the ground in the information war so that people clearly understand who the traitors are. The traitors are the ones who are helping the invaders, period.
And let's be clear. Please continue, but let's be clear. We've been building for decades. You've been warning. I've been warning. I'm getting chills. Smart people that are patriots in the government know this. Trump understands it. Stephen Miller understands it. Tom Homan understands it. But everybody, the police and the military and then the citizens and everybody. This is it, people.
You think they're going to let us just take our country back and turn the economy back on and do all this stuff? No. This is the big globalist move. This is it. Matt, explain it to him.
I can't really count the number of times Alex has said this is the big one, the globalists are making their move, but this still does feel somewhat different because it's in the context of a civil war that Alex has declared is started. If the civil war is started and the globalists are making their big move, there's literally no other message you should take, if you take Alex seriously, then now is the time to shoot people. Matt Bracken is right on here that sending in tanks and a huge display of force into LA would be counterproductive. And what they really need to do is more thoroughly demonize immigrants so they can start accusing people who support immigrant rights of being traitors. As it stands now, they can really only use this authoritarian push to detain and deport non-citizens. But if you're able to radicalize things to the point where even the act of standing up for immigrants is traitorous to the United States, you can disappear whoever you want. Matt Bracken is giving great advice here on how to create a police state and facilitate a campaign of ethnic cleansing in the United States. So, good conversation.
Yeah, you know, it is kind of interesting when you think about it. There was, there's a blueprint for how to make the blacklists of the communists and, you know, get them out of here, make sure that they never get work. But because nobody actually stopped it and it was just kind of like, I don't know, a bunch of idiots, there's no blueprint for how to stop it. So, it's just going to go on. And we just have to hope that they're stupid.
Yeah,
You know, like, because
I ran out of letters.
Because Bracken raises an interesting point that is in actuality very, very stupid. But he was like, oh, they've been planning this for years. And what's interesting about that is, what is their plan? If they have been planning this for years, as far as I understand Bracken's understanding of their plan, it was have fuel available.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that does not take years to plan.
No. And no, to the extent that there is anything that has been planned, it's we've talked a lot of shit
right.
for a long time.
Right.
And insisted that eventually whites would be under attack.
Sure.
So that's what they've prepared.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think this is trash. I'm disgusted by the direction that this has gone. And it's only going to get worse.
I believe that.
Look forward to that.
Ah.
So FEMA camps.
Sure.
How do you think Alex feels about those? Based on our 8 years of doing this podcast, what's Alex's take on FEMA camps?
Who's FEMAing whose camps?
Just in general. Just give me a vibe.
All things are transactional.
Your answer is supposed
SponCon.
Your answer is supposed to be strongly opposed.
You would think, but maybe that was SponCon.
Yeah, maybe it was. Who knows?
And so this is the big move. The Democrats know it's game over. Everybody's turning against them. Their election fraud's being exposed. Same thing with other globalist parties around the world. So they're all going to totalitarianism. They're all going to total censorship. They're all going to arresting their opposition. They're all going to activating the big groups they brought in of third world populations that burn things down if the population ever tries to get back control. And so that's where we are now. And they were going to push Trump, as Podesta said, in that big war game that I've harped on thousands of times in the last 5 years, the 5 years in August, because they were so honest about what they would do. Have insurrections, have uprisings, force Trump to go in, try to restore order, break down the country, bare minimum crash the economy, then organize a coalition of enough states to demand the federal government surrender, basically. So this is terrorism. Get the F out of L.A. or we'll burn it down, says the congresswoman. The governor, come get me, arrest me, make me the martyr. They believe they're still going to beat us. This is their absolute break-the-glass plan that they've had on the books for a long time. Reagan knew about it when it was embryonic, so they had the response to it, Rex 84.
This is a gigantic deal. I can't stress that enough. For the entirety of Alex's career that I've been aware of, you know, all the episodes that I've heard from the early days, he's been a guy who used Rex 84 as the proof that the government has a plan to round up right-wingers and put them into camps. In the same way that Operation Northwoods is the real-world thing that serves as the basis for all the thousands of imaginary false flags Alex has uncovered over the years, Rex 84 is the real-world thing that proves that FEMA was going to come and get him because he's too patriotic. No ifs, ands, or buts. It was bad, and it was part of the globalists' plans. Here's just a little taste of Alex talking about it in 2006.
In my first documentary film that I produced, America Destroyed by Design, we didn't just go show the handover, the Panama Canal, and, of course, the Long Beach Naval Base, the Chi-Coms. We also played clips from the 1986 Iran-Contra hearings where Congressman Jack Brooks from Texas goes to Oliver North, hey, what about this plan, of course, in the name of dealing with illegal aliens? Even then, that was the plan. We'll build camps, say it's for illegal aliens, and then put political dissidents in it. And he says, what's this plan about putting political dissidents in camps here in America that I saw in Miami papers? We ought to get that clip and play it. And the committee chairman, Inouye, who's still up there, Brooks is dead now, says, we cannot talk about that now. We'll talk about that, if you'd like, in executive session. A lot of that was later declassified. It was Operation Rex 84. So now they're telling us, oh, we're building all these camps for illegal aliens. And then they're saying, oh, you know, because most Americans want to do something about the illegal aliens. But that's just the surface. And they say, oh, even in the Houston Chronicle. And it's going to be during crises for American citizens.
So the premise was very simple. And to be clear, this retelling is the InfoWars version of Rex 84, not the real world one. The globalists wanted to create camps that they could use to imprison political dissenters. And the way that they tried to sell it to the public was by saying that they were to house undocumented immigrants. The public would be more inclined to see that as a benign use for the camps, so the globalists could get them built. And by that point, they could use them to secretly scoop up Alex and all the people like him who were opposed to the New World Order and the police state that they sought to impose. This was during the Reagan administration, so the political dissenters that were targeted by Rex 84, that plan, they were obviously socialists and left-wingers. But Alex understood that if this kind of treatment could be applied to them, it could be applied to right-wingers just as easily.
Wait, so you're saying like some sort of, imagine there was some sort of company that was making a database mm-hmm. of some sort of all a certain type of people.
Right.
Are you saying that you could also draw the conclusion from these information
yeah.
that they might expand that out?
Yeah, and Alex understood that dynamic in the past.
Weird.
And he followed the appropriate conspiracy position of being opposed to Rex 84, regardless of the fact that it targeted his political enemies. It's a plan you cannot trust to not be abused. But now Alex is saying that Rex 84 is a plan that Reagan came up with as some kind of defensive maneuver?
Because they're cool people.
Apparently there was an embryonic version of Podesta's social upheaval plan going back to Reagan's time, and Rex 84 was a martial law solution to that possibility.
Makes sense.
Left-wingers and socialists were causing problems that couldn't be handled by normal means thanks to that pesky Bill of Rights, so the only answer was police state dissident camps,
Makes sense, I guess.
And now Alex seems okay with that. So the important question to ask yourself is, what changed? Did Alex learn more about Rex 84 in the intervening years? That's definitely not the case. He knew all about this story in the late 90s and early 2000s, and there hasn't been a whole lot more to update yourself on. When you see what's changed, it helps illustrate what's going on with Alex. The change between his earlier take on Rex 84 and his current one is that he no longer feels like he's a potential target to be put in the camp. Alex no longer feels like he's an opponent of the system that would be running the police state, so he doesn't care if there is one. Even back in 2006, Alex was aware that the pretext for creating these camps for political dissidents was undocumented immigrants, so he can't pretend to not understand that in the present day. In his early career, he was a guy yelling at Ollie North about how this is tyranny, and now he's morphed into the guy who's doing PR work for Ollie North's tyrannical plan. I know that we're just in a parade of new lows for Alex on a seemingly daily basis, but this is fucking impressive.
I mean, well, in a way, it makes sense. It's almost like the life cycle of a butterfly,
mm-hmm.
you know, right? Like, you start out because it's profitable to open up this space where you're anti-tyranny, but then because of what you do and what you actually believe, you lead to tyranny. And then because you've learned to tyranny, well, you might as well be pro-tyranny. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to be on the other side of tyranny. Anti-tyranny is only cool when you're not in tyranny.
Yeah.
When you're in tyranny, you got to be pro-tyranny, buddy.
I think it's like more like a moth.
Okay.
And then you start with really, really wanting to be sure that right-wing white male Christian heterosexuals are not oppressed in any way by society.
Sure.
And you realize that, like, if nobody is oppressed by the government, that includes the subset of, you know, straight white Christian men.
Theoretically.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but hey, I can advance the interests of everybody and sure. the protection of everybody from the police state.
Mm-hmm.
And what but all I really care about is the straight white males, Christians part. Yeah. That's all I really care about. But I can make it look like I'm fighting for everyone.
Mm.
And then over time, the moth comes to realize, like, hey, there's an option where I can just look out for the interests of straight white males, Christian males. That's an option.
There it is.
This is becoming politically viable. Why don't I just do that?
Easy peasy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's basically the mothhood. So, Alex, I honestly think that after saying that we're in a civil war,
yep.
and after saying all this other crazy shit, this is deeply, deeply irresponsible.
This is their absolute break-the-glass plan that they've had on the books for a long time. Reagan knew about it when it was embryonic, so they had the response to it, Rex 84. Well, here's the deal. Trump wants stability, controlled borders, not having a war. He doesn't want totalitarianism. He wants to turn the country around. But when groups bring you warfare and don't follow the rule of law or even the rules of war, terrorism, they have brought us here. And they think that when Trump's forced to respond and you're forced to respond, the military's forced to respond and choose a side, the globalist anarchy collapse into the country, nuclear war, you name it, that we'll just balk and that they're going to have us go to our knees and capitulate, and then let them have their long victory bringing in more illegals for congressional apportionment and voting. That can't happen. This is it. We win here or we lose long term. So everybody better get it. I've been on here 31 years. You can mark this date, June 9th, 2025. The Civil War started now.
Do something. Do something. He couldn't be stronger in his emphaticness that, like, you need to do something.
Yep.
If you're listening to this, you'd go get your gun. Why not? Why wouldn't you? If you didn't, you would have to reflect on, I don't know if I take this all that seriously.
Yep.
I don't know if I really believe what he's saying.
I don't believe any of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you believe it, it's fucking go time.
Mm-hmm.
This is the culmination of 31 years of Alex's career.
Yep.
What the fuck? That's so irresponsible.
Well, I mean, I think it means that maybe he's not going to be on air for much longer.
Mm.
Possibly.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Or he just, you know, doesn't care when he plays with fire.
Mm.
So Matt Bracken is really on board with this idea of, like, we got to brand our enemies as traitors.
Sure.
This is key.
You know, just the main message I think that has to get out is to pin the traitors on the side of the invaders. You put, like, those memes of making Newsom's face next to the guy with the Mexican flag on the burning car. That has to be an image that is in every American's mind. He is on the side of these invaders. Biden and Mayorkas brought in 10 to 20 million new, young, fighting-age men into this country, unarmed, knowing they can be armed later, and they are the invaders. Anybody who is supporting the invaders is a traitor. So it's a very powerful word. I call them the two T's, treason and traitor. Hang traitor around Bass's neck. Hang traitor around Newsom's neck. So that when people see him talking about, oh, our poor community, you are talking about the invaders. You are supporting the invaders against the people who are trying to restore our country. And this is going to be an easy message to get out if our network talking heads will stop focusing on minutia and look at the big issues like Article 4, Section 4, the guarantee clause. Federal government must stop invasions, though the president has great power through that, and the Alien Removal Act, Sedition Acts. There's a lot that can be done, but the intellectual argument has to be made that we are on the right side and the people supporting the invaders are traitors. Traitor is a powerful word. It has to be hung around their neck. Very important.
Well, it's who they are. It's who they are.
Yeah, that hung around their neck is really an important thing because, you know, traitors, you hang them.
Yep.
You know, like
traditionally.
Yeah, yeah.
You can draw and quarter them as well.
I guess it depends on... That's a mess.
Hey, listen, I mean, if you don't have four pieces to send to the four corners of Great Britain, then how will people know you're pissed?
That is true. Otherwise, you might be just kind of...
You could be peeved.
Right.
It could be an annoyance. Right. You're like, oh, I'm just going to hang this traitor. Like, no. I am furious.
Who knows if you're chuffed?
Absolutely. No. Can't trust you. Yeah. You're a traitor.
So it's, you know, this is killing language that Matt Bracken's very clearly engaging in.
Enjoying it.
Yeah. And then he says something that makes me feel like this guy is a prophet.
Hmm.
And the looting is already massive, but corporate media is not reporting on it.
Right, and this will happen, and there will also be targeted assassinations of enemies. Like, it'll begin with, like, gangland type of hits where you just have an opportunity to take out your enemy because you know that the police are basically overwhelmed and unable to respond. There won't be any chance to collect evidence, et cetera. So you'll see a lot of targeted hits. This could also involve hits against police at their own homes, you know, DHS or ICE officials at their own homes. So, you know, in this day and age, with Google Street Maps, you can find a picture of a guy's house from above, from the street, mark it. One guy can mark it, you know, with something like a spray paint on the sidewalk. Somebody else comes along with a Molotov cocktail. So this is the beginning of a modern urban dirty war.
Less than a week after this show, there were two targeted assassination attempts at the home of Minnesota lawmakers. One was successful in killing the Minnesota House Speaker and her husband. The other one only wounding Minnesota State Senator John Huffman and his wife. The killer had a list of other potential targets who were political figures, and he probably would have attempted to kill more of them if he hadn't been interrupted at his second location. He escaped and led law enforcement on a long manhunt before getting caught on the 16th. In the time that he was on the run, media outlets interviewed his roommate, who shared his last text that he got from the killer that said, quote, I love you guys. I made some choices, and you guys don't know anything about this, but I'm going to be gone for a while. May be dead shortly. In another interview, the roommate was asked if the killer was into any particular media, and the first thing that he brought up was that the dude was a big fan of InfoWars. When I first heard about the story, I didn't immediately assume that the shooter was a fan of InfoWars. It's important to understand that possibility doesn't mean the same thing as proof. So even if it seemed like something that someone who listened to InfoWars might do, that doesn't really mean anything. When I watched the interviews with a roommate, things clicked a little bit more into place. As Alex has been covering the protests in LA, he's been painting a very severe picture. He's also been mentioning Minneapolis a lot as a way to re-evoke emotional memories about the George Floyd protests. He's been saying that we're in a real civil war, and while interviewing Matt Bracken, Matt essentially describes an attack someone could make on a public official. He's saying that that's what the globalists might do, but if you're hearing this show and you think that there's a civil war that's broken out, it kind of makes sense that Bracken's commentary sounds more like a pitch meeting. And when I heard that the roommate read his last text from the shooter, one particular word jumped out at me, and that was choices. I've made some choices. It made me think of a video that Alex plays at the beginning of most of his shows. We've talked about this before, but in the context, this current context, I wanted to play this clip again.
We are the number one hated and attacked media organization in the world by every evil, disgusting, sickening organization on the face of the planet. And I'm going to say it. If you're going to go as big as you can. That's why John Hancock literally saw people signing their names, little bitty, and people he knew signing them. You really couldn't tell who they were. And I get it. Every person signing that was signing their potential death warrant. He got up there and went, boom. And he said, if I'm going to have the king coming after me, I want him to come after me, number one.
That's a pretty large signature, Johnny.
Yeah, and I'm going to risk my life fighting tyranny. Anybody that's ever been in fights, you're not looking for fights, but you've been in a few. You learn, you hesitate when somebody's trying to beat the hell out of you. You're going to get your ass kicked. But you just decide to beat the living hell out of them and stop worrying about who's winning. And you're going to win almost every time unless you're fighting Mike Tyson. I know people will knock you upside the head really hard and like sit back and look at what it did. Or somebody will hit you in the side of the head with a baseball bat, then they'll kind of sit back and watch to see what it did. I'm like a Terminator. You're about to find out.
I'll shove that bat up your ass and turn you into a popsicle.
So that's what's going on here. And I love it because we're drawing their fire. We've exposed them. We've drawn them out of their rat holes. To do all of this, the Soros scum and the Soros DA, and just all of them, they're filth. They're disgusting tyrants.
just like judges in Nazi Germany or Soviet Russia. They're disgusting. And it's like we're in the dark and they got night vision. We're in a pitch black arena with no light and they've got their illuminators on and they can see us and we can't see them. Well, guess what? I walked over with my listeners collectively and pulled the switch and turned the lights on. The real war's here with the globalists and Soros and Obama and the New World Order and BlackRock. They have declared war on us and we accept the challenge. We're taking the country back. Their attacks on Trump, their lawfare, their all the criminal activity. How'd that work out for them? They were dumb enough to brag. Remember everywhere. It'll be over for Trump when this mugshot comes out in Georgia. We're finally getting it. Every channel, remember? It's the end, the mugshot, the mugshot, the mugshot. And then Trump nails it with a beyond Clint Eastwood, badass American Eagle gaze of total defiance that everybody looks at and knows deep down, that's the alpha male, that's the badass, that's the defiant real person. You can't fake that look. And then when they shot him, you got even more of that look, except the lips pulled down and the teeth bared and the eyes bugging out. Yes, yes, we get to see who's really who at times like this, don't we? And now the bad guys are going to find out who's really who, aren't you? Because the veneer of civilization is burning off. And all the posers and all the thugs and all the bullies who thought they had this country on its knees and cowed are now just beginning to understand that they have awoken the terrible giant.
I feel like if you were listening to this show and took it at all seriously, then that video would leave you in a position where you felt you had to make some choices. When I started this episode, I said I was going to make a grand statement, and here it comes. I'm not saying that Alex is fully responsible for the murders and attempted murders of those Minnesota lawmakers, but I am saying that the way that he behaves on air makes those kind of acts more likely to happen, and there's no way that anyone could convince me that Alex doesn't understand that. I think that there is probably at least some connection between the behavior that he's engaging in on air and those murders. I don't think that Alex meant to. He doesn't know who these lawmakers are. It's not like he gives a shit. But I don't believe for a second that he doesn't understand the potential ramifications and the types of behavior that he's trying to elicit from people. And we don't always see follow through. There's not always a news story that is the consequence of someone taking action because of Alex's inspiration.
Sure.
But from what I've seen of this case, it seems like, well, this is probably one of the times that it happened.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, no one else could ever possibly have figured this out. And there's no way to have ever seen this kind of language leading to terrible things happening coming.
Nope.
And anybody who had the opportunity to do something about it clearly was right in not doing it.
The question of what is doing something about it is, you know, what the difficult part is. Because, like, hurting Alex isn't productive.
Well, I mean,
does the court in any way have some kind of a statute that allows them to be like, we have to stop this? I don't know. I'm asking it as a question.
You know, Lopez had the opportunity, Judge Lopez, the judge in his bankruptcy court, had the opportunity to just approve the sale to the Onion. Mm-hmm. It followed all of his rules.
It might not have in his mind.
Whatever. That's fine.
Yeah.
Whatever. That's fine. But he still could have.
He could have.
There's no like law that said he couldn't. He could have done it. And yeah, most of the time he would have, and so on and so forth. So yeah, it's his fault.
Okay.
Fine.
Yeah, I don't know how to assign or apportion blame. And again, I want to make it totally clear that I don't think that, like, this person saw Alex and then was like, I'm going to go do this.
Sure.
But I also am not saying that, I'll say that it would be an uphill battle for someone to convince me that it's not a contributing factor.
Sure, absolutely. I think that's because it is a contributing factor.
Yeah, and it makes me think, like, man, I think Matt Bracken has some fans who are fucking hardcore. I seem like he's on talking about storming the Capitol, and then a week later that happens.
It does happen.
He's on this show talking about targeted assassinations and shit like that, and a week later, two Minnesota lawmakers and their spouses are shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I find it very difficult to imagine that Matt Bracken isn't somehow a variable of, like, he's got a fandom of fucked up dudes.
Yep. Yeah, stay away from that guy.
Yeah. So anyway, Matt Bracken talks about how we got to call people traitors.
Sure.
We played it in the first hour in January, February, March. I said by June, they're going to use L.A. They're going to get violent and make ICE go in there. They're going to attack them, and this will be the trigger. Then Democrats will call Trump a dictator and call for uprisings nationwide. It's all happening, and the last ingredient is the false flags, because I know you've seen it. Democrat leaders everywhere saying, oh, Trump and Tom Homan are going to kill migrants. They're going to mow them down, on CNN, just out of the blue. And that's the talking point, because clearly they're prepping it for the false flag. Let's speak to those scenarios. You've already mentioned
that's,
it some.
That's why these days before that false flag are so important, to educate people about who is right and who is wrong in this situation. That this is sedition. They are seceding from the federal government, and they are siding with the invaders. The people who defend the invaders are traitors. Traitors traditionally did not get the firing squad that an honorable soldier would get. Traitors were hung. Okay? They were not given the respect of a firing squad. And so hanging the label traitor on somebody is very loaded and very powerful. But that's exactly what they are, and that's why we have to use the T word, traitor, for these people. So that when things come to a boiling point, you're going to be on one side or the other side. There's going to be no in between.
This does feel loaded.
Sometimes it's like, what are those people doing? So it's South Carolina, and it's the 1860s, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to go kill these other people because these rich people own people.
Mm-hmm.
Motivation locked in.
Well,
then you listen to this shit and you're like, this is a guy who is unsubtly saying, like, listen, I know you live next to them and have known them and you like go to the grocery store together and yada, 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 yada. But they're a traitor and you got to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, yeah, that's pretty much how it does. That's how they do it. It's that simple.
Well, the image that you're calling to mind of someone in South Carolina, it implies a lot more information than they maybe had at that time. You know, like, why is this happening exactly? Who am I fighting for? That might not have been their perception entirely.
Sure.
Certainly some people, sure, it was, but maybe not every soldier.
That's what this guy is, you know? Yeah. This guy is the, hey, listen, you're not doing this just so rich white people can own people.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're in the same situation. This is all happening so rich white people can own people.
It's not far off. So Alex is really feeling the energy of civil war, baby.
Sure.
And unfortunately, Matt Bracken ruins the momentum because his Skype isn't working.
Asshole.
All right, Matt Bracken's with us about another 10 minutes or so. And folks, these clips I'm going to play next segment that just came out are insane. Democrat leaders saying storm ICE facilities. I mean, this is it. I'm telling you, I can see it intellectually, informationally, but I usually get a chill once a week when I say something I know is really important and it hits me. I'm getting chills every 10 seconds right now. I mean, my spidey senses is danger, danger. You know, in Lord of the Rings, when goblins are near, Sting starts glowing. This sucker's white hot right now. Matt, are you feeling that? Sorry, we lost your audio, Matt. Unmute yourself.
Yeah, are you happy?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I didn't do anything at this time. You hear me?
We got you, Matt. Go ahead.
Hey, okay. Matt, I went. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
I thought we were supposed to roll there, man.
Ruined the moment, Matt.
Fuck.
Matt, you ruined the goddamn moment.
This is what happens with live, you know?
This is why we can't fight a civil war anymore. Because of shit like this.
Yeah.
Shit like this, Matt. I'm trying to do a Gungan thing.
You think that was a boss nass?
Yeah, that was a boss nass.
Okay. I feel like it was more a General Grievous.
Okay.
No, it wasn't. So Matt Bracken, this guy is a fucking mess.
That sounds right.
In the 65 riot, there are a lot of personal histories. There was not even a SWAT team yet. Okay, a riot squad, kind of, maybe some shields, batons, but there was no SWAT team. But there are a lot of anecdotal histories of police going four to a car, three or four to a police car, and bringing their own deer rifles. And if they saw somebody engaged in an arson attack, they would drop them. This wasn't in a police report. It, you know, people just shut up. They just shot and shut up. So the police in 65, there were no smartphones around to catch them in the act. So if you want to stop arsonists, you have to shoot arsonists. You can't let them walk down the street preparing Molotov cocktails to throw into the furniture store. But in this era, that'll never happen. The police will never be authorized deadly force, even against arsonists. So what's going to happen is vigilantes are going to do that instead. And this is going to become a rifle war. I wrote about this pretty extensively in When the Music Stops, How America's Cities Will Explode in Violence. When the police are not able to clear roads or protect neighborhoods, suburban vigilantes are going to do it on their own. And they're going to do it wearing balaclavas, IRA style, and they're going to shoot anybody they think is an arsonist or, you know, an insurrectionist from the other side. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying, based on my study of history, particularly Northern Ireland, this is what's going to happen.
You are definitely excusing it. That's ridiculous.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, man.
How about that?
Hey, the cops, they can't step up. So suburban vigilantes are going to step up and kill people because the cops, they have smartphones that are going to get them in trouble and stuff.
You know what's interesting? Here's another thing. This is another thing with these guys. This is the thing with these guys. In this guy's world, he's the IRA. Mm-hmm. But motherfucker, you're Britain.
Mm.
You're Darth Vader, dude. You are not. This is not good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know enough to parse everything down.
Sure.
But yeah, there's a there is a feeling of righteousness that he ascribes to his own position.
Yeah.
And the words coming out of his mouth could not be more so fucked up.
Yeah. No, it is essentially, to boil it down to its most elemental thing. We got to get these Mohicans off of my lawn
because
I own this land.
Yep.
Yep.
There's a lot of that.
Makes sense.
So Matt Bracken is, while I'm not excusing vigilantism, he's very clearly excusing vigilantism.
Obviously.
And quite emphatically supporting it.
Very much so.
And here's what Alex has to say.
It will always go to vigilantes. It will always go to that. And in that scenario, we will win, though I'm not endorsing it. But here's the problem. The left is so under mind control that even though they're burning down buildings and killing people, when people start defending their property and things, they will spin each one of those like a George Floyd and use that to expand the burning down around the country. Back in 60 seconds.
Oh, but we'll win? Huh. We'll beat the devil if we use vigilantism.
Seems like that's the smart thing to do.
Yeah, because for 31 years, seems like we haven't beat the devil.
Yep.
Huh.
Hmm.
Alex is not endorsing this, but he would win.
Weird how that works.
Hmm.
Weird how that works out.
So there were the LA protests.
Uh-huh.
And then there were some other protests that were scheduled a little bit further down the road. The No Kings protests.
Sure.
And Alex talks a little bit about this. I found something kind of interesting.
So let's look at one of the main groups. And they always create a new front group, Black Lives Matter, you name it. But if you look at No Kings that popped up a few months ago saying Trump's a king, and you look at the big globalist billionaires that fund it and their aims and their goals, and I'll show you some of the other funding to it. This is a front group for hundreds of NGOs that you track each one of them, got massive money from the Department of Energy, the EPA, USAID, that all means CIA. And they've got maps of what they're going to do starting on June 14th. This is just the warm-up right now, as I warned you.
So you may notice that Alex is saying that the No Kings protest is set to be the big event, that the LA protests are just the dress rehearsal for. This is just the beginning, and that's when it's really kicking off.
Sure.
So that's taking place on June 14th, which happens to be the day when the lawmakers in Minnesota were assassinated, and the guy who did it had no King's flyers in his car. Since the murders, it came out in his charging document that on June 9th, the shooter made a bunch of purchases related to carrying out the attack, like the fake license plate to label his car as a police vehicle and ammo. That happens to be the day that this episode that we're listening to is from, where Alex is declaring the Civil War has begun.
Sounds right.
Alex has emphatically said that the Civil War is upon us now, saying it is giving him chills, and this is the big one. The LA protests are a trial run for the No Kings protest that'll see America descend into full chaos. So maybe it's not a huge surprise that another one of the shooter's last texts was to his wife and kids saying, quote, "Dad went to war last night." I don't think that these are unrelated.
Mm.
I don't know the extent to which this is a person who would have done something anyway, but there's a lot of overlap.
Well, what you gonna do? I don't know. Try doing a podcast about it for 10 years.
I think that that makes me feel a lot less, more powerless. You know?
Well, I think it's...
I'm not saying you're wrong, though.
No, I mean, it's interesting because ultimately what we're all going to have to wrestle with is an amount of helplessness in the face of overwhelming power.
Mm-hmm.
And the question of winning is not possible, so it's just endurance. And so in order to endure through what's going to come, you gotta accept that shit's gonna get dark.
Mm.
And shit's gonna get dark as a consequence of the things that people have done. Mm. Not as like a surprise, things are suddenly getting dark.
Right.
This is the result of decades of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you don't want to repeat it, you got to not do that decades of shit anymore.
And 2 points. One is that shit gets dark and you can still make light. You know,
sure.
That is something that can't necessarily be taken away. So as dark as anything may appear, you always have the ability to create some kind of light.
Sure.
And that's important to hold on to. And then second, in terms of this like specific case, Alex, I think, has some overlap with this guy's path
mm-hmm.
towards targeted assassinations of political figures on the specific date. I think that there appears to be connection here.
Sure.
And I believe, and it's something that we've talked about a ton, Alex does this every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, I've called this boilerplate.
Sure.
This is what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And 99 times out of 100, it doesn't lead to someone shooting someone else. But that 100th time it does. And that's the problem. He can hide behind, you know, the 99 times where someone doesn't follow through with anything to pretend that there is no toxic and dangerous influence that the games that he plays have.
Sure.
But that's delusional.
Sure. I mean, I think the hard part about it for a lot of people is the conversation is like, oh, well, because 99 out of 100 times blank, you know,
mm-hmm.
when in reality, it's like because he did it 3 times, he's going to do it 100 times, which means this is going to happen.
Yeah.
So this is an inevitability of the one time that yeah. it was allowed to happen.
Well, but also the 99 times is an illusion because there are cases of things that just don't rise to the level of making headlines.
Sure.
Like, who knows how much domestic violence or fights or stabbings or
totally.
Whatever come out of people being driven to a point where they feel like they have to do something because Alex is telling them the Civil War has started and this is the big one.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's wrong to just point at Alex. There's a lot of media figures in
sure.
his orbit and shit who play the same kind of games.
Yeah.
But this was, you know, this has been very tough to watch.
It is tough to watch whenever you, I don't know. If people are interested in listening, I think they'll figure it out, I guess.
Mm.
You know, that's what people can do. They'll figure it out.
So we'll end the episode on a little bit of a, not as bummery-ish of a note.
Sure.
which is a weird way to introduce a conversation about Epstein.
That sounds right.
But Alex apparently has...
Shit's about to get dark.
Alex has seen Chase's show from the day before.
Okay.
And now he's decided maybe Epstein's alive.
No.
I want to shift gears to a bunch of other news. The latest big thing on Epstein. An angle we've not really gone with before, but I think there's... From the evidence I've seen, needs to be looked at. Is he really still alive?
Oh, boy. So you're malleable on this shit. It's so insane that I was like, you know what? Chase fucking said it. It played well on Twitter.
Maybe this motherfucker never dies.
So
maybe he's a robot clone.
So I guess they had to kill some time.
Sure.
Because Alex brings Chase in to discuss this new theory.
Something's not right here. I agree with you. And it could be that he's actually in witness protection. Because that came out a bunch, that he was in a good mood, said, I'm getting out of here soon.
That's the only reason I can think of that good people would lie about it.
You know, yeah! I mean,
and then they would stage his death.
Right.
And then, but have to cover it up.
Right, because it's super embarrassing if they put him in witness protection, given all the crimes that he committed. And if it comes out that, you know, that he was doing those crimes on behalf of our own intelligence apparatus, so they're covering it up.
And because he's got dead men switches,
yeah,
they have to let him out. But then they got to put somebody in jail, so they put Ghislaine Maxwell in, and then here comes Epstein and her lawyer going, okay, now that Musk said this, less than 24 hours later, you better let my lady out. And it's not that Trump's involved with Epstein, it's that the Trump admin made this deal in 2019. I was already thinking this for a while, but I didn't want to go there.
No.
And I hate to speculate. It's not what I do.
No.
When I say they're going to burn stuff down in June and launch a civil war, I mean, they said they would. I had to come back almost 5 years ago. So, and they relaunched it a year ago. So, I mean, that's not me speculating. That's why so much of what I say comes true, like 99%, because it's usually just them, like Operation Lockstep. How to know about 6 feet apart and, you know, mask and lockdowns. I mean, freaking a whole bunch of documents, not just Lockstep. On this, though, there's so many pieces. Chase, I, gut level, I think he's alive. I think you're right. I think it's true.
What an asshole. Yeah, maybe he's alive, but yeah.
You know, so
gut level, I think you're onto something, young boy.
I've thought about this for a long time.
You stupid young boy.
I've thought about this for a long time because throughout history, there's always been implements of torture,
mm-hmm.
right, that are ostensibly to get information out of somebody. And I've always thought, you know what, this is just a way of excusing psycho-sadists who are allowed to get into a position of power and then exercise their weird pleasure thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I genuinely think anything that you could achieve with any amount of torture... I could get the exact same level and efficacy from just yelling at people at the right intervals of time.
Mm.
Like, I'm very loud, and I could really make it uncomfortable for people.
Sure.
You know, and that's because torture doesn't even work. Mm. It doesn't get accurate information. It's just about hurting people. That's all it is. That's all it ever has been. It's about weird people trying to get their torture shit out. And that's why whenever I hear him say stuff like that, I think there's no element of torture that could ever get me to believe that that is not the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my entire life.
It's quite dumb. And I think that they'll probably abandon it in due time. I don't think there's a lot of legs to this. I think it implicates Trump in ways that you really don't want to unpack.
Really?
It's very
really?
Stupid.
Not only is he, quote unquote, not in the Epstein files, somehow he's also not in the Epstein files and kept him alive.
Yeah, and faked his death.
And faked his death. Yep, that makes sense. That sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah, I think these dumb fucks. Here's the bigger issue.
Yeah,
I understand where you're coming from, and
sure.
I agree with you.
Thank you.
But the bigger issue for me is these ding dongs have no chemistry when Alex isn't drunk.
No, he needs to be drunk.
It's crazy. This is so dry. This is so bad. There's just he needs to.
I mean, he needs to drink. Quite frankly, McGurk's not a good character sober.
Mm-mm.
I think we figured that out.
Well, and I think that that's the other thing too. One of the reasons that I always felt like Alex should not do his show drunk, is because I had misguided maybe,
sure,
but I had some belief that it would make him hurt people less.
Right.
And I think that one of the things that I've come to the conclusion of is he's going to hurt just as many people sober, and he's a little bit more fun to look at when he's drunk. Because at least sometimes there's some pretty funny emotional outbursts, you know?
Yeah, you know, there's something of this in the Tao, all right? Okay? The men who intend to destroy can create, and men who intend to create destroy. No one knows why this is. Heaven wants what it wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that heaven wants Alex to be drunk as shit, and that all of what's happening right now is a lesson to the rest of us to make sure that this continues happening.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm glad that we finally got there and that kind of wisdom. I think that's as good a place as I need to leave off.
You're going to need the Tao to get there.
So this tragic, awful, and what a nice sort of tone. Have a great vacation.
Have a great vacation.
So we'll be back. But until then, Neo and Leo, wait, we have a website.
Indeed we do. It's knowledgefight.com.
I'm also DZX Clark. I'm the mysterious professor.
Woo, yeah, woo, yeah, woo.
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.